Thanks, Dave. Hi, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show. A very, very tough day, would you agree? I mean, the day is just starting for many of us, but the news out of Brussels is not pleasant today, and we'll certainly be talking about it as the day goes on. Steve will keep you up to date in the newsroom with any developments over the terrorist activity that went on today in Belgium. Just an awful, awful story.
It's not over yet, I feel.
Yeah,
and
I know.
I'm freaking out. I have a kid in Ireland. And I didn't know how far Brussels was away from Ireland.
Is it 5 hours, 6 hours?
My husband
somewhere
said
there?
It's a five-hour flight, so it's not right there. But now I'm hearing reports that Europe was originally targeted in this. This brings up so many questions because the head suspect in the Paris attacks.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name, and I'm sorry, I don't want to give his name.
Yeah.
I'll just use that as an excuse. Right.
Abdelsalem?
Yes.
He was the one who got away.
Yeah.
Right. And then they found him right in Brussels. And now reports are coming out that he was going to take his own life and die for his beliefs. But he changed his mind and took his suicide vest off.
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking, doesn't that look bad to his people? Like, won't that make him talk to us because we're going to help him now? Because I feel like they would target him because he didn't follow through with what he was supposed to do for Allah.
He chickened out,
what he did.
Right.
And he
we don't know what exactly. Maybe he had a moment of great conscience and, you know, decided.
Why do you always have to look on the bright side?
Well, I don't know, but we just don't know what
right
led to
it's
him
too
to
hard.
Exactly.
He abandoned the vest. He
changed his mind. That's a fact.
He disabled the vest.
But, yeah, I mean, right, look at all the people he sent in to do his dirty work, and then, I'll take a pass on this one. And then I wonder if his people are, you know, like, would he be a target to them? That makes me think he would talk to us more.
You would think, yeah.
It's just, it's a crazy world in which we live in an airport. How does that happen?
Well,
isn't it supposed to be so secure there? What the hell are we taking our shoes off for?
Yeah, I don't. It's always just, you know, it's random. And I mean, the terrorists obviously want to make a statement and get as much attention as they can and take out as many people as they can. So it's a heavy traffic area. So it's just.
And is this retaliation for us getting that guy?
Well, we didn't get him. Belgium got him in France. But I mean, that might be it. Or it might be that they were worried that perhaps some other plans were going to be compromised. So they moved them up.
But here's what we're doing and everyone's doing is you try to piece this together rationally and once you're in the terrorism game, I don't know how rational you can really be because
ration goes out the window.
It doesn't figure into the equation. So I mean, all the people who try to solve it and figure it out, it just gets more and more frustrating because you can't solve it and you can't figure it out.
Look, there will be, you know, there have been attacks and there will be more attacks.
Right,
and so we need to stop being so surprised when they happen and start supporting people who are trying to stop them from happening.
Right.
You know, I mean, I woke up this morning and looked at my email. I have friends who just left Belgium, actually. And, you know, right away I was surprised and shocked and all of this. But it's like, well, you know, we need to let that go a little bit because there's going to be another one somewhere.
Sure.
It might be in San Bernardino. It might be in Manitoba. But, you know, there's not going to automatically or magically be an end to this. It's going to be a systematic sort of disabling of these people.
I will never stop being shocked. I know it's inevitable that's going to happen again, but it still shocks me.
Do you remember we had Eric Zorn on at the end of the year, and he had predictions, you know, what will happen politically, what will happen globally, on and on and on. And one of his questions about the predictions for the upcoming year, this year now, 2016, was, do you expect more terrorist attacks? And it's painful to say yes, but it's unrealistic to think that all terrorism groups of all kinds all over the globe will just, you know, find a way to get along with everybody. It's unrealistic that, you know, that's their bread and butter is attacks like we just saw in Brussels. It's awful. It's horrendous. It ruins people. It doesn't just kill people. It ruins people's lives forever. You know, you got a loved one who died in one of the attacks today. That changes your life forever, not just for the day. It's just awful.
28 dead, 166 hurt.
Well, it's up to 34.
Oh, no. CNN better update.
It's just so, I mean, it's just the word sad doesn't begin to describe it.
But will you stop being shocked even though you know it's inevitable? It still shocks me.
I don't know if it doesn't shock me anymore. I don't know what the word is for it. I don't expect it, and I'm not shocked by it. I'm somewhere in the middle. I'm repulsed by it, you know? Because you like to think that as a species, we've evolved enough to know that this isn't the answer, that taking out innocent lives isn't the answer, but it just keeps happening.
I don't know what to say. It's just, I know there are a lot of kids in various high schools who are in different parts of the country. I have friends that are in Paris right now with their French class.
Yeah.
Michael's in Ireland. And when I signed up for this, I was a little hesitant to let him go.
I know.
And then I thought, come on. I mean, God forbid anything happens, but you can't stop your life.
Yeah. when you think about it, how big the world is, you can't just... put a little pinprick somewhere and say, this is the place I don't want my child to be because something could happen. It's impossible to figure out, where and when. It doesn't make sense either. All right. It's been a rough day already. We're hoping to help you through it. Steve, like I said, is in the newsroom and we'll give you any updates as they become available. There's a lot of stuff going on. We'll get to as much of it as we can. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right, it's us. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. And we're talking a little bit about what happened in Brussels earlier, a couple of attacks. The report, Steve, that you gave last was 34 people had died. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what the number is right now. But obviously, these numbers are probably going to change.
Look at the screen right now, Bill. What does that say?
CNN is reporting at this point 28 people dead and 166 hurt.
Well, I'm looking at
28.
No, I know. It's depending on your source.
But I'm going with you from now on, Bertrand.
Well, look, I they're all going to change. I mean, Fox is saying 31. So
why is there so much discrepancy?
Reporting, and you're getting it from different areas, and some might have a different level of confirmation. I don't want to say it's not relevant, but
It's not the most important part of the story.
I mean, dozens of people were killed today and hundreds hurt.
Yeah, that's the most important part of the story. Several texts coming in, and one of them said, Billy, you've now become numb to terrorism. And I've not become numb, just the opposite. Really just the opposite. When it hits me the hardest is, and it usually takes a day or two for this to happen, but you'll see the papers not just list the number of people that have died, but their names and a little bit of backstory on who those people are.
Yep.
That's the crushing part, is when it's not a number, and it should never just be a number. It should be the personality of who those people were, and that's when it hits me the hardest.
Someone has texted 630, we have become desensitized to terror attacks. I haven't. I'm still shocked. I know it's inevitable that it's going to keep happening, but every time it does, I'm like, I'm shocked.
Yeah.
Look, my point is I'm not saying we should be desensitized, but I'm saying we should, recognize the world that we live in, and they're trying to shock you, and the fact is there are going to be more attacks. There just are. So that the next time you wake up and find out that there's been one, I think there has to be a point where you don't say, oh my God, I never thought this would happen again. It's going to happen again. And that's just all I'm saying. There needs to be sort of a view of it that way.
Steve, here's what surprises me, and I say this in a very, very good way. I'm surprised at the number of attacks that are thwarted, that somehow intelligence figures out before they become a full-hatched plan and something horrendous happens. I'm amazed on the good side that happens. I love hearing that. That's the best news of all, is when they figure out some plot that was about to go down and they stop it before it happens.
New York police, I heard today, have said they've stopped dozens.
Yep.
Or infiltrated dozens of what they thought might grow into attacks.
Yeah. So
and
then,
also,
that's
can I just
news.
Say, from New York, they say, and a lot of those were thwarted with the help of Muslims in New York City working with police.
How about that? How about that? Doesn't that go against the grain?
Makes you feel a little better.
Yeah, it does. It does. One other quick story, Steve, and I know the precedent today is going to be on what happened in Brussels, but just a quick story that I first heard from you during the last news break, and both Wendy and I have been looking it up online, and that is the death of Rob Ford, the former mayor of Toronto, and certainly one of the strangest politicians that I've ever seen. That was a very peculiar man.
I didn't realize he was as ill as he was.
I didn't either. 46 years old.
If you remember, in the middle of all of that, he came to Chicago for some treatment. And
for some cancer treatment, right?
Yeah, I don't remember if it was rehab or cancer treatment, but yeah, he was, you know, there were some zany times in Toronto.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why he was so zany, knowing maybe, you know, he wasn't going to live to be 100.
You know, I don't know the timeline of when it was discovered, his illness or not. I thought he was already out of office. I thought. And his brother is still doing something in Toronto, isn't he, Steve? Do you know specifically?
His brother was involved. I don't know if he succeeded him as an alderman or what, but yeah. I don't know exactly what he's doing, Bill.
Really, one of the most, I mean, I'm sure everybody's familiar with the story. It happened just a few short years ago, but this was like one of the most unbridled politicians of all time. He just said the craziest stuff on a regular basis. And, you know, we were here in America watching this.
He's given us some material a lot.
I know. And I'm trying to remember who the guest is that we had in the last several months who was from Canada. And I asked them casually about Rob Ford, and they said, yeah, he just kind of vanished. He fell off the face of the earth. But I knew he had been sick. I didn't know it was this life-threatening sick. And a much younger man than I had thought. He was only 46 years old. For some reason in my head, I thought he was quite a bit older, somewhere in his late 50s, early 60s, but that was not the case. Strange day already.
Well, you know, when you start getting older, you know, you hear your parents say, you know, all my friends have gone. I'm in my twilight years, whatever. You don't think about it, and then it hits you because, like,
when people your own age or younger start to die, yeah.
That's always been a weird feeling. You know, I had a friend in high school die young, and, you know, it's like, oh, that's so young.
Yeah.
But then as we get older, it still happens.
You know Louis C.K., of course, the comedian Louis C.K.
Yes.
He does this thing about what happens when you turn 50. And he says, when you're not 50, if you're somewhere in your 40s, even up to 49, and you die, everybody panics, goes, "What? He was 49? What happened?" Everybody's so panicky. But if somebody dies at 50, people go, the guy was 50. I mean, it's going to happen. Just the difference of that 49 and 50, people just accept it and go, well, the guy was 50, you know, he's not going to live forever.
Keep that in mind, Kevin. How old is he? 29?
Kevin is 29. Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Difference between 29 and 30.
That's it.
Huge.
That's it. All right. We have a lot on today's show.
Wait, what?
Nothing. Everything's fine.
And Trump says it's okay to waterboard that suspect, by the way, from the Paris attacks to get more information.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, will you pinch me? Am I just like in the middle of a nightmare right
now? No, it's real. Everything's real. Big show ahead. Steve with the news next, and then more coming your way. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It is a Tech Tuesday. We will talk to CNET senior editor and host of the CNET Update, Bridget Carey, in about 6 minutes or so. Steve, now reports are copycat attacks could be coming. That's one thing I find myself worrying about when something happens like this. What else is going to be carried out?
Here's another thing that always happens in these. When one of these attacks happens, that you start falling into, it's almost predictable, but there will be a few scares coming up in the next day or two. You know, remember after Paris, they cut short a soccer game in Germany. They sent everyone home because people on our edge were going to probably get reports about, you know, this threat or that threat. And, you know, with any luck at all of them will be false alarms or an extension of security, but it's just what follows. It's what comes next.
Steve, I don't know if you'll know the answer to this, but earlier this morning, Mayor Emanuel said there's no reason to believe that there was any activity suspected here in the Chicagoland area. Is that something that...
For today or ever?
For the foreseeable future. All right. So is that standard now? Are other mayors in other cities in New York, Los Angeles, Boston, are they making similar statements? They are.
They are.
How do they know? I mean, how does Rahm Emanuel know that we have not been targeted?
Okay. You got to pull yourself together here a little bit. There was a big attack in Brussels. We all are susceptible. There could be an attack any day, anywhere.
Right.
And we're probably not going to know. But
that's what I mean. So it seems.
They're always careful. If you listen to what these guys and women say, they say we do not have any knowledge of any imminent attack, or we haven't been given reason to believe. And it's because we go and ask them. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, in Beecher, Illinois, in a small town, there are people who live there now asking their officers if they're safe. Everyone, no matter where in the world, if it's in the Western world, not if it's in Iraq or somewhere else, but if it's in Europe and there's an attack, all of a sudden we think that we are under imminent threat as well. There's a logic to the where we could be, but the, you know, overwhelming chances are that it's certainly not.
All right. Well, first of all, I'm not falling apart.
I didn't mean it that way, but, you know, this is what we do to ourselves.
I know,
you know,
but this is what we talk about. And my question is, if there was some possible threat, I don't trust that we'd be told.
You mean if the government knew of one?
I think they would do something to thwart it, but don't you think there would be mass hysteria if it was announced that, you know?
Which would you prefer? I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but would you rather they said, hey, we think something really big is going to happen somewhere? Or would you rather they kept it under wraps and tried to stop it?
That's a great question, something we should explore. Because
the compromise that they had found for years, and it isn't so much in play now, but certainly after September 11th, what you would get is, there was a terrorist threat level and a color coding that went along with it,
right,
which was their way of saying,
yeah,
you know, be as vigilant as you can, especially now, you know, or let up a little bit. So,
but, you know, that became CYA too, Bill.
Yeah,
it was always at orange or something.
Right.
And then during a holiday, they'd elevate it. Or
right,
if there was an attack somewhere else, they'd elevate it. And
where is that now? Do we still use that?
I don't know that is that still in use, Steve? I don't remember the last time we got a color coding.
No, they got rid of the colors,
I think. That's gone.
I mean, they still will talk about heightened security and things, but I think they've gotten rid of the colors.
Yeah.
I just, I don't know if I'd want to know. I guess you'd want to be prepared, because I even like being prepared for a blizzard that fizzles out, because I can go get milk, bread, and beer.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it's like I almost just want them to thwart it. I would like to have faith in my government to take care of me.
Well, but you'd rather they caught the bad guys than alerted them that they were onto it, right?
Right.
Yes.
Right. But I consider it part of their responsibility if there is, for any reason to believe that something horrible is coming. I'd prefer to be notified and said, hey, be on especially high alert in these areas at these times.
I would like to know, yes. I said
even if it's a scare tactic, even if it's just a, look, there's a very good chance nothing's going to happen.
Better safe than sorry.
Yeah.
Seriously, I really like to know of these storms that are coming our way, even if they fizzle out, because, mm-hmm, you know, it may happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but they're never going to know for certain that something's going to happen.
Until it happens, you're right.
They're going to get reasons to suspect something might be brewing. And so if you start wanting them to notify the public every time they get wind of something that might be happening, you know, we'll be running around like chicken
yeah,
littles.
Yeah, that's what I'm envisioning right now.
And that's not going to help
anyone.
Yeah. I mean, I get your point, Bill. I know that if there's one scheduled,
yeah,
you know, down the block at,
yeah,
10, I want to know about it because,
yeah,
I don't want to be there.
Yeah.
But they're never going to have that schedule. They're going to have
But they get the chatter.
Whiff.
They get the chatter.
Sure, they get all kinds of chatter, and 98% of it probably is meaningless. So if they tell us about all of that chatter, we're never going to leave the house.
Can you just always be around? Because you really are the voice of reason, Steve Bertrand.
Oh,
I'm
completely
serious.
Wrong.
Right. Right. We don't know yet. We'll find out. All right. Let's do this. A break. In a little bit, Bridget Carey joins us for Tech Tuesday, and then Steve with the news with an update on what's going on in Brussels. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. It's a Tech Tuesday, and in this crazy world in which we live, technology is running rampant. So that's why we have Bridget Carey, a CNET senior editor, and she's also the host of the CNET Update. I can't reach my phone now.
That's
I've
fine.
Moved things around. There's Bridget Carey. Hi, Bridget.
Hey, how you doing?
Happy Tech Tuesday to you.
Indeed, same to you.
Wendy may be drunk, Bridget. Just
no,
be
I'm
ready
not.
For anything.
I am not drunk.
All right.
I am not. I wish I was.
All right.
All right. So what do we need to know? Let me guess. Is Apple in the tech world news today?
Oh, when is it not? But
I
actually,
know.
It is a pretty big Apple. It is a pretty big Apple week. And so Apple had this big event yesterday where they showcase new products, but I wouldn't call them new. I'd call them maybe new-ish because it wasn't that exciting of an event. This was something where Apple took, you know, concepts they've had before and just repackaged them into new, pretty devices. So you have a new iPhone, but it's not the top-of-the-line model that you get in the fall. This is actually the entry-level model. They're calling it the iPhone SE. And it's a souped-up version of the old 5S. They took the body of the 5S, in fact, this thing fits the old cases for the 5S, and just gave it all the goodness of a 6S. So inside it's faster, you get a fingerprint scanner, you get Apple Pay, along with some Siri tricks, and it's not as expensive as the newer models.
Well, now
and
they tell
me. It's also smaller.
You know, right. I just bought the 6S, and I'm looking at an EOS 9.3, as Bill calls it.
Mm-hmm.
iOS 9.3. Should I update this on my iPhone? I already did it on the iPad this morning.
Yeah, the 9.3 update that rolled out yesterday has a couple of new tricks. I think the biggest feature is that it helps you sleep better.
So all right.
How does that happen?
Because, you know, the funny thing is it woke me up this morning. My iPad did to say, do you want to download the new software?
No.
So that's not working.
Why would it make you sleep better?
There's this night mode in the settings where you've heard that, if you have your phone on when you're going to bed at night, you're going to have a hard time going to sleep.
Yes.
And that's because of the blue hues of the screen light. And so what it's going to do if you turn this on is automatically at sunset, your phone's going to start looking a little more yellow, more warmer colors. And, you know, that could be something that might help people who are chronic, phone checkers in bed. And also if you're trying to protect your phone from maybe someone who uses your phone too, like if your husband or wife knows your password and you want to make a note, like a secret note, an individual note can have its own password or fingerprint scan. So those are the two big highlights, but I wouldn't call it. Once again, like I said, this event from Apple wasn't really wowing. We got a new iPad Pro that is the same as kind of like the last one we saw, but now smaller. So I guess smaller is the new trend here.
All right. Conversely, I was lucky enough to get an iPad from my family for Christmas, but my husband was very happy with his Amazon Kindle. But there's something that Kindle owners should do. It's very important, isn't there?
Yes, actually. If you have one of those black and white e-reader Kindles, we're not talking about the color tablets here.
Just Amazon the e-reader.
Right, exactly. So Amazon has a important update that if you don't update it today, if you have an older model, even the first generation Kindle, this goes all the way back to, if you don't update it over the internet today, tomorrow you will not be able to connect to the internet at all. And this is kind of shocking that, oh my gosh, how could they do this to your device and just make it, absolutely, useless. But I have no fear if it does happen to you or someone in your family doesn't know what happened. There is a way to manually get that update on there. It's kind of a pain. It involves plugging it into the computer and downloading it manually. But it's something to keep in mind. So if you have an old Kindle, even one as far back as like 2012, which is like the Paperwhite first edition, be sure to download the software update over your Wi-Fi. Otherwise, you're going to have to manually go in and download on the computer and somehow get a cord and load it up on the device, and that takes more time. But it is important to do.
I say just get a new Kindle.
Get a new one.
There's too much trouble.
Throw the old one away.
Yeah. Did you hear what the Apple executive said yesterday?
Uh-uh.
Oh, my gosh. It was just so awkward and out of touch. One point in the presentation to convince why the iPad Pro is going to be a great PC replacement for people is that they said, can you believe the sad, and they used the word sad, statistic that 600 million PCs are more than 5 years old? And people started laughing and clapping, like, oh, yeah, shaking their head, like, oh, the pain of it all, five-year-old computers. So, yeah.
What rich little snobs.
I know.
Why are you blaming Rich Little?
Oh, no,
I don't understand why you blame Rich Little. So when they build a computer now, what is the intended span of the life of it, Bridget?
90 days.
Is it? No, it has to be longer than that. When you buy a computer, you want to expect it to be at least 5 years, right? Wouldn't you think?
Right, if you ask the shareholders, and they're going to tell you, 2 years. But, of course, like, people have great computers that last more than
right.
5 years. I have computers. Sometimes, PCs have more up-to-date, chips inside, or you can just replace a processor card and, keep it going for a while. So, yeah, of course you don't need to replace your your machine that often. But of course, and that's what Apple's really pushing for with their new iPads, to be a computer replacement.
Right.
And, you know, that's why they're kind of making light of that and looking like they're out of touch, rich, privileged
wow.
people.
Kevin just told me his computer is 10 years old.
10 almost. Years old.
Almost. It's almost like half his age.
I think I got an 07.
Bridget, I use a Commodore 64 and it runs like a dream. I love
it. I'll never throw out my Genesis.
Sega Genesis? That one's working good, too.
Sega!
How did you celebrate the 10-year birthday of Twitter yesterday? What did you do to celebrate?
Were we supposed to celebrate?
Yeah.
Because I just, as usual, wasted more time scrolling and retweeting.
Oh. All right.
I don't know how much of my life has gone to this thing.
That's right.
You know, I was telling my friends here at work, who aren't really my friends because they just smile and nod and they don't really care what I say. But when I got the iPad, I wanted to download pictures from my video camera onto it. And I said, oh, you know, darn it, I can't do it. Thank God I have a laptop. Well, there's an adapter you can get at the Apple Store or at Best Buy or whatever, and it's $29. And it's an adapter you plug into the power hole of your iPad. That's not the proper term, I know.
No, it is the power hole.
And it's like a little square, and you put your SD card in there, and I can now dump the pictures from my video camera onto my iPad. So I was telling you guys off the air, I don't really need a laptop anymore.
They actually made more adapters that they talked about yesterday for that exact reason. You know, hey, buy all these extra accessories since we only have like one port on the thing. You know,
right.
Here's another, you know, thing to plug in your cameras, plug in a microphone, all sorts of things like that. And they really souped up also the camera with a flash. So more people might be taking photos with the iPad, although it's still a little awkward to me.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, to hold that big-ass thing up to take a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, you block people's way when you're trying to take a picture of your son or something or your daughter. It's big. It blocks
sure,
a lot of
room. Sure, of course. Yeah.
So the iPad Pro is...
I know a lot of people do it as like when they're on vacation and their actual phone burns out or something, but...
Right.
Yeah, I see it too often, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We see it right on Michigan Avenue. People
all the
are
time.
Doing it. It looks really goofy.
All the time. Bridget, what is coming up on the CNET Daily Update?
Well, we're talking about how the FBI and Apple trial has been postponed now that the FBI says, well, actually, we might not need Apple's help to break into an iPhone because we think we found our own way, and what that really means because, well, if the FBI found a hole security-wise, you know, should we be concerned and will they ever tell Apple what it is? Because very often when the government finds a security flaw, their priority isn't to notify Apple or Google, it's
sure.
to take advantage of it. And then maybe later they'll tell them. So as consumers, it's kind of a weird, you know, moment there if they do find
so
a way
what
to
is,
do it.
So what is Apple's response to that? Because that could be either good news or bad news depending on your thoughts on the case. But what,
drat.
Did they say drat? Did they text drat?
Apple has not made a comment yet, but really the FBI is really just asking for some time to try this method out. So we'll find out in 2 weeks with a status update on if they got it to work or not. Because if they didn't, then this whole thing will just be postponed to continue in April.
Wow. That's quite a development. Well, thank you, Bridget. We appreciate it. Have a great rest of the week.
Thanks, you too.
That's Bridget Carey from CNET. We'll take a quick break. Steve will give you the news, and then we have more show for you. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, the fun new website that I read pretty religiously now is called Grown and Flown. Why, you ask? Because parenting never ends. And from Grown and Flown, we are talking once again to Lisa Heffernan. Hi, Lisa. How are you?
Good, Wendy. How are you?
I'm a little afraid because both Bill and our journalist, Steve Bertrand, our newsman, have told me that my son's a junior in high school, and I should have already applied to colleges. What?
Yep.
What? No, not at all. Not at all.
Oh, man.
You guys are mean.
Maybe we are.
Oh, did you say junior? I'm sorry.
Yes. Because actually, the school is having a college night coming up April 4th, and that's...
That's when it gets started.
And so I'm going to get... I don't know what to do. Help me, please, Lisa.
Well, you know, I've just published an article in the New York Times last week called "Vice College Admissions Officers Give Their Own Kids." So I went around the country and I interviewed college admissions officers who have high schoolers themselves and asked them, "Don't tell me what you tell the crowds. Tell me what you tell your own kids." And many of the things they said were basically back off. In other words,
that's easy for me to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I spoke to the head of admissions at MIT, and he said his daughter, not surprisingly, is a strong math and science student. So he's telling her not even to bother with AP English, don't bother with AP history. That's not her strength. That's not her interest. Focus on what you do, what you like, and what you do well. So it very much goes against the argument that a lot of parents hear that your kids have to do everything. Your kids do not have to do everything. They have to do the things that they enjoy well. That's what attracts the college's attention.
That is interesting to know. Now, how important are grades? Because I was talking to my sister last night about my junior's grades, and be honor roll, nothing, you know, too exciting. But is this something that they look at exclusively is how?
No. Grades of it, great, most college admissions officers will tell you that the transcript, and I'm going to explain that for a second, is the most important thing. And that would mean both grades and the courses that kids choose to take. They like to see that kids challenge themselves. That doesn't mean that you're taking 5 AP classes. It may mean that you're taking, that your favorite subject is art and you're taking the studio art AP. In other words, they like to see that a kid is a strong student and in the things that they're best at and the things they love the most, they've taken that extra challenge.
And Lisa, we have to point out to Wendy and to anybody listening also that some schools put heavy emphasis on essay questions, that they'll send you a series of essay questions, and those can be as important or even more important than the grades themselves, right?
Well, the essays are very important because it's the way the college admissions officer sort of gets to hear the kid's voice, gets to know them personally. I mean, let's be fair, a transcript's just a bunch of letters and numbers.
Sure.
And the advice that we got from college admissions officers for this piece is make sure that that voice is true, make sure that it sounds like you, and make sure that anything that isn't on that application that you tell in this essay. So it's a chance really to explain yourself and anything about you in any realm that's different or interesting or novel. It goes in the essay.
We were talking to someone fairly recently. He's done a documentary on how schools maybe are, their teachings are very archaic, the way you sit in a desk, you know, row by row. And I will put a link up because I can't think of it right now. And he told us off the air that there's going to be a new way to apply for colleges starting, I believe, next year, where it's done via video and online. Are you aware of anything?
There's going to be a lot more of that. Many schools are already allowing kids to submit their own videos. There's something called the Coalition application, which I believe is going to allow videos as well. That's starting for next year. So we're going to, you know, very much jump into the 20th century here. But, you know, there are already plenty of things kids can do. They can send videos. They can send artwork. They can send music. They can email with college admissions officers. College admissions officers are real people behind a real email. And my experience with my own children is when they had a question, I just said, ask the admissions officer. As long as it isn't something you can already find on the website and then you look like an idiot. But if there's something that you can't find on the website and you're wondering about, send them an email. You're a real person. They want to hear from you. They're interested in your application. One of the other things, though, that this is not new world, this is old world, that many of the college admissions officers told us was get those applications in early, on time at a minimum, but early. Because, you know, colleges get all their applications on certain due dates. There's an absolute flood of them, and they're trying to wade through, you know, knee-deep in applications. If your application came in a month earlier, there's more time. It's not so rushed. They haven't got, you know, they're not stacked up on their desks. So do it a little bit earlier. Take the pressure off yourself.
How do you know the deadlines? How do you know?
It's all on their websites. Schools,
I don't know
all have
any of
deadlines.
This.
Schools all, give me a call. Schools all have different deadlines, and you need to look on the website because some schools have December 31st deadlines, some have January 15th deadlines, some schools have early admission, some schools have two rounds of early admission. Each school is very different. There is only one thing that all schools do, and that is that all decisions from the students need to be in by May 1st. So there are many seniors right now trying to make their decisions, and they all have until May 1st. But in terms of application, every school is different. So students have to check that. Another piece of great advice we got from the college admissions officer is if you apply to an early admission school, wonderful. That's your favorite school. That's where you want to go. Many of those applications are due November 1st or November 15th. Put your regular applications in as well. Because if you don't get into that early decision school, you're going to be disappointed. Everybody's disappointed. Your mom's going to be disappointed. Your dad's going to be disappointed. You're going to be let down. And there's going to be a couple of days of sort of dragging your feet and feeling like it's all gone wrong. It's a lot easier to weather that disappointment if you've already got those other applications in. And it's a lot easier to do a good job on those applications when you don't have that disappointment hanging over you.
Lisa, so go ahead.
No, I thought that was very wise advice from one of the dads.
Are you you're familiar, I'm guessing, with the term waylaid? I had never heard of it until recently. Do you know what that is?
Do you mean waitlisted deferred?
It's deferred. It's all of those. I've heard the terms interchangeable. What this means is one of my daughters has taken a gap year, and she's on this list where it's almost like being in limbo, where they have a certain amount of slots to fill. So they've said, we're interested in you, but we want to see who else is interested in the school first, and if enough people are or aren't, we'll base our decision on that, which puts her, like I said, in this weird kind of state of limbo. Yeah. Is there something we should be doing in the interim, or is there nothing we can do?
Well, there are a couple things. So many schools call that deferred. So say a student applies early, and the school can't really decide whether they want the student or not, and they want to see all their regular applications, so they'll defer the school student until the regular admissions decision pile. Waylaid, I guess, is sort of another word for that. There are some things you can do. If that is your favorite school, if that is a school that you want to go to no matter what, and if you will accept them, and students need to be honest here, it is worth writing the admissions officer an email, not a letter, not a visit, not a phone call, an email saying, you're my first choice. This is the school I'd most like to go to, and if I am accepted, I will matriculate. I will come to your school.
Because we've already been there, by the way. We visited them in December.
Okay, but that letter is worth an emphasis because you know what? These schools want the kids who they accept to accept them. It's just natural. So if they know that they've got a kid here who's saying, you're my favorite school and I will come to you, then that figures into their decision.
All right.
May not change it, but it's a factor.
All right.
We're talking to Lisa Heffernan. Her website is Grown and Flown. So much advice on there about everything. And now advice college admissions officers give their own kids. It just doesn't seem fair that they can say, we're going to look through all the other applicants. What is a school really looking for?
You know, many schools are trying to create a very diverse, balanced class. So they want the same number of, some schools, same number of girls and boys. They want a diverse class geographically. They want a diverse class on many different yardsticks. So it may be something that simple. It may just be they want to see what their whole pool of applicants are going to look like so that they get enough athletes and enough musicians and enough poets.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. The other thing, though, Bill, is that if anything has happened since that application was submitted, it's super important that kids relay that information. So if a student has gotten any awards, if a student has undertaken any activities, or if there have been any changes that you would have put on that application but have happened since that application, again, just shoot the admissions officer an email saying, can you please add this to my file? I'd like to let you know X, Y, and Z.
All right, good.
Okay, and what if you don't get into your favorite school? Do you apply again the next year? Do you just keep trying?
No. You apply to enough schools the first time so that you get into a school that you want to go to. Most kids need a list of schools that include schools that all schools that they would be happy going to, but some that they have a better chance of getting into, and some that are perhaps a little bit more of a reach for them. Their college admissions officers at school can give them an idea of how many schools that is. For some schools, kids, it may be 6 schools. Some school kids, it may be as many as 10 schools. But kids need to make sure that they're applying to some schools that they are almost certain to get into and that they would like to attend.
That's great advice.
Sure.
And we can find this article that you wrote on Grown and Flown. And where else was it? Just in the New York Times, you said?
The New York Times, exactly. It's in the New York Times over the weekend. It was called Advice to Your College Admissions Officers, Give Your Own Kids. And then we have plenty of information, as you said, on Grown and Flown.
Lisa, really quickly, I'm curious. You said the way of applying by way of a video is something that's going to be a reality in the very near future. It's already, I guess, happening in some places. Is that a video of just the student themselves, like just their face talking about themselves, or is it a more creative video? What kind of video
are they? Accomplishments?
Yeah, what are they sending?
Well, for different kids, it could be different things. So if you're, say, you're an actor or you're a musician, it could be you talking interspliced with small segments of you performing, if that's something that
like
you do.
Like a demo reel almost?
A little bit, yes, yeah. But with some explanation, with some conversation, with some discussion, exactly. It's going to supplement the essay, so it's going to be a way for an admissions officer to get to know you a little bit better. I do know there are a few schools who are already doing this, and I think it's going to become more widespread.
And that's not in place of an essay. That's to supplement it, you said.
I think so far it hasn't been in place of an essay, but, you know, we're in a fast-changing world here. So
yeah.
I could see the day where that's what kids do. But at the moment, I believe all schools are still asking for the essay as well.
And see, when you said, you know, just email the admissions officer or whatever, you can find all this information on their website. I don't know what's wrong with me, but I don't feel like they're going to answer you. You know, you think they get so many emails, but they do.
They do. Well, many schools, particularly larger schools, have regional admissions officers. So you're not going to just, you're not going to email info@admissions. You know, whatever the school is. You're going to find the name. Let's say you live in the Southwest. You're going to find the name of the admissions officer that covers your states or your region, and you're going to email that person. My kids certainly got some responses from when they had specific questions. They got responses from those admissions officers, yes.
All right, we're talking to Lisa Heffernan, and she is going to hang on for 1 second. We're going to take a quick break here, 312-981-7200, and we have some phone calls, some questions about getting... You guys really scared me that I should have already done it.
We didn't mean... Steve, we didn't mean to scare you. Yeah, I guess we did.
You totally
did. We
did. When I was a senior is when I talked to my guidance counselor to figure out where I wanted to go to school.
I do know in my own case and in several of my daughter's cases, it was right around the midway point of the junior year where you started scheduling tours and
things
like
that. That's what
I'm doing. So, yeah, you're on par. You're fine.
All right, well, thank you.
You're fine.
All right, 312-981-7200. Grown and Flown is the website, and we'll continue talking with Lisa Heffernan. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. It's Bill and Wendy. We are talking with Lisa Heffernan, who has put together one of the most helpful websites I've ever been on, Grown and Flown, Parenting Never Ends. A couple of topics here. The most important question to ask your teen when your kids leave for college, remember this. Unhappy college student, 5 ways parents can help. But today we are talking about advice college admissions officers give their own kids. And Lisa, we have a couple of listeners who have some questions for you. This
Great.
Is Marianne on the line. Hi, Marianne. This is Lisa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Bill and Wendy, I love your show.
Oh, that's nice.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Secondly, I have twins who are juniors, and we're going through the college visits and all this kind of stuff. And I'm wondering, how heavy is the waiting on waiting as far as, you know, how important is it that they have extracurricular volunteer activities, or do they look at them if they have outside jobs? You know, how important is that stuff?
Marianne, thanks for your question. I asked a couple of the admissions officers about that. Now, I can't extrapolate to the whole world because I just, you know, spoke to a couple dozen admissions officers. But one of them said to me, you know, in our family, making money is super important. So my daughter works as a lifeguard every summer, and she just stated on her application that's what she needs to do. And she keeps all of her activities during the school year. So I think these things are important to show that your kid is engaged and working and committed to something. But it doesn't matter what it is they're engaged or committed to. So if your kid is doing a part-time job through the school year, it's important that goes on the application because admissions officers respect that and they know just how demanding that is. So it's important they do something.
Games.
Video games does not count, and I know from experience. So it's important that they're engaged, that they're working, that they're committed to something, but what that is doesn't matter. It only matters that they tell their story.
Okay, thank you so much.
No problem.
Thanks, Marianne.
Boy, video games would be a category on
too
my
bad.
Sons, too. Yeah.
That's too bad.
And I think we have time for one more. This is listener Bill. Hi, Bill. This is Lisa Heffernan.
Yeah, hi, Lisa. I just had a question. My daughter was already accepted at several colleges. Of course, her favorite one is one of the more expensive ones, and we have already gotten the financial figures from them. We're just curious, is there any way you can maybe possibly get them to boost their financial aid?
You know, Bill, I'm not at all an expert on financial aid, and we didn't ask. I was asking about admissions, not about financial aid for this piece. But I have heard from other parents that if you do have a better offer, not that you're going to, you know, try and play one off against the other, but if you explain to an admissions officer, we can't come to the school because we're going to have to take an offer from another school with, you know, a better financial package, that sometimes they may reconsider. But I'm really not an expert there, Bill. I'm sorry.
It's worth a try, though.
Thank you very much, though.
Boy, that's interesting. This is like applying for a job. I didn't realize. I just went to ISU because my brother went there and my grades were good enough to get in. I don't even remember applying, and I only lasted 3/4 of a year. But, you know, it's changed a lot.
Part of the challenge, I think, so I did the same thing. I went to my local state school. I think a lot of parents, we did that. We didn't really know about places that far outside of, you know, our geographic area. And, you know, the world has really changed. And I think one of the reasons people are so interested in this topic is that parents are having to learn right alongside their kids.
Yeah, because I don't know what I'm doing. Bill, did your daughters help you through this process?
Yeah, you know, it's really strange how it's worked out. But for some reason, because of the prices involved now, because of the mere cost of the education, you have to pay so much more close attention. Because, I mean, you're shelling out an insane amount of money for those 4 years. So, I mean, it was, as you pointed out, it wasn't haphazard, but not as much thought went into it a generation ago as is going in now.
Pretty fascinating stuff, Lisa. Everything you write is so helpful, and, you know, it seems like we're all going through one of these things on your Grown and Flown website at any particular time. So thank you so much.
Oh, Wendy, thank you. Thank you, Bill.
Take care, Lisa. Appreciate it.
Grown and Flown. You can go to grownandflown.com, and you can read her latest piece, Advice College Admissions Officers Give Their Own Kids, not that they give the public, that they give their own kids while you're getting ready to get your kids off to college. That's in the New York Times and also grownandflown.com.
We're going to take a quick break. Kim Gordon has the news for you, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Kim. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. I am at BBC News' breaking news on their Twitter right now, and they have an image of three possible suspects in the Brussels airport attack. It's been widely shared by Belgian media, and who knows? Hopefully social media can help find the people who did this. We go live now to Tom Makaitis, who is professor of history at DePaul and terrorism analyst. Tom, some shocking news to wake up to this morning, although people are telling me not to be shocked because these terror attacks are inevitable.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the case, and so is the vulnerability that they just exposed. I've had concerns about this for some time. We're very good at protecting gates and access to aircraft, or we've gotten much better, let's put it that way. But the vulnerability that is there are these check-in areas and the baggage areas where there's unrestricted access from the street, and that's what they took advantage of. Early morning, crowded flights. Brussels is a major international hub. Lots of people milling about. Very attractive target to kill lots of people in a short order and shut down the transportation system.
Tom, ISIS claimed responsibility. Does that automatically mean that it is ISIS who's responsible?
Well, it doesn't automatically, but all of the indicators suggested that it is, in fact, them. I think that we concluded that even before they claimed it. The individual who was captured was probably part of an unfolding plan, and the terrorists may very well have simply advanced their timetable, knowing that the Belgian authorities were actually interrogating him and getting some good information.
So I'm just wondering if this is retaliation for the capture of Paris terrorist suspect Salah Abdeslam, or is it something that was planned?
I don't know. This is speculation, but I have a sense that rather than retaliation, it was that they simply had this in place. He was probably going to participate, and because he was captured, they felt that they needed to move up the timetable before the Belgian authorities closed in on them. I think that's a bit more likely, given the incomplete information we have at this point.
I heard a terrorism expert, an analyst, the other day on television explain this theory, and you tell me what's behind this, Tom, is that a lot of times when there's an event, a terrorist event, they have to watch that area very closely for the next 24 or 48 hours for fear that whoever planted a first bomb would plant a second one in the same exact place.
Yeah.
What's the theory behind that exactly?
Well, that's not theory. That's long-established practice. That the Viet Cong used to do that during the Vietnam War. You set a minor explosion off in a restaurant and your major bomb blast by the door as people were running out. So the idea of a follow-up with a secondary detonation to kill either people going in that direction or to kill emergency responders is a long-established practice. Then you worry about copycatting, you worry about all kinds of things. So, I mean, that's not anything that I would consider particularly new.
Someone has texted in that these were suicide bombers, so why are they showing pictures of them? That's not necessarily true, is it?
No, the most likely suicide bomber was the detonation in the underground station at the metro. What may very well have happened, again, we don't know, is that they have these pictures of these guys pushing luggage racks in. I don't profess to be an expert on pyrotechnics, but I've seen a lot of photos of the aftermath. The devastation strikes me as significantly greater than what you might find around the blast from a suicide vest. The other thing about a suicide vest bomber, excuse me, I'm being a little bit gruesome, but you often can tell that because often the explosion decapitates the suicide bomber. So you find a severed head in there, and that's an indicator as well. You know, the fact that they're focusing on these three individuals suggests, it doesn't prove, because we don't know a great deal at this point, that these individuals pushing in what maybe have been suitcase bombs were the perpetrators at the terminals, and that the suicide bomber was probably the guy or the person at the metro. And they did find a third device that did not detonate. They were able to detonate that safely, and nobody was injured.
Tom Mikitas is our guest. He is a professor of history at DePaul. He is a terrorism analyst.
And let's take a quick break here. And any updates or anything, we would love to come back and find out more about this, Tom. He has been all over the television this morning on WGN-TV. Mm-hmm. And it is gruesome details that he mentioned, but,
sure.
You know, this isn't pretty.
Nope.
It
no
is
part
very
of it
gruesome.
Is. All right, a quick break. More with Tom Mikitas next. If you want to jump in, please do. 312-981-7200. That's our phone line and our text line. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, and we are talking to terrorism analyst and DePaul professor of history, Tom Mikitas. Tom, reading some stuff online at about 8 a.m. local time, the Brussels airport, explosions hit near the departure gates. Now, that doesn't mean that they had already gone through security, correct?
I think that's misinformation because they've got really good data showing it's the check-in area. If you look at the bomb blast pictures, you can see those kiosks that we all go up to, and you can scan your passport if you don't have any checked luggage, and you know, get your boarding pass and then go to security. That's where they hit.
And then I was reading to Bill in the subway at 9/11, a bomb blasted, and you pointed out
there's no significance to it being at 9/11, right? That's purely coincidence.
Well,
isn't it?
Yes and no. It's certainly the height of rush hour, but the other thing is they do like to have these things as close together as they can, because that maximizes the effect. Because you don't, and especially with an underground, you get multiple reports of blasts, and people are reporting the same thing from different angles. So they were trying to get them to go off as close together as possible.
And what happens now? Obviously, there have been social media pictures and everywhere about these three alleged suspects.
Yeah.
So what happens now?
Well, there's going to be a massive dragnet, but you know, and people the last couple of days, since they caught Salala, you know, the terrorism planner, have asked me, oh, wasn't it really stupid to go back to his neighborhood? And I go, no. Best place to hide a tree is in a forest. He obviously had a significant support network and cover. And it sounds, as I read between the lines, they only caught him because they got somebody else and found his fingerprints and were able to track him down and so on. So it's unless they were able to get out, and I think the Belgians shut everything down quickly, as did the rest of Europe, they may very well have headed back into that neighborhood. And you're going to see the kind of intense combing over that happened after the Paris attacks. And one can only hope that that's done in such a way that it doesn't add to the alienation of what's a pretty marginalized population to begin with.
Tom, what exactly would be the significance of a country like Belgium to a terrorism group like ISIS? What do they gain there?
It's nothing to do with Belgium per se. It's the fact that Belgium has a very significant population. 7% of the country are Muslim, not that large, but 25% of the population of Brussels. It's an international hub, and so on. And the other thing is, it's not just the percentage of the numbers. That's very misleading, and 99.9% of those people are not going to cause any trouble for anyone. But they're ghettoized. Unemployment in some of those areas is as high as 50%.
Wow.
The youth, the alienation of youth, this is a huge issue. Young men in particular don't fit into their parents' world because they come from another country frequently, aren't accepted in the European mainstream. And, you know, these are exactly the type of young people who can be snapped up and recruited and so on.
The disenfranchised.
Right. Yeah. And Belgium has had the highest per capita number of Europeans who have gone to join ISIS. And then, of course, some of them have come back. And that's the connection there. France has an equally significant problem. Many European countries do. But, you know, Belgium, you know, just it happens to be that that's, you know, where this was centered.
All right. We know you have to get going and do WGN TV,
sure.
But a quick question from John. John, did you have a question for Tom Mikaitis?
Yeah, I heard on another report a guy that actually is in Belgium, and he said that the bombs that went off in the airport were at a check-in for a flight going to the United States, to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So that would mean that Americans were being targeted.
That is possible. I don't deny that, but I that may have been part of their targeting. But the indications for me were not that they were attempting to hit the plane, certainly, but they were certainly trying to kill whoever was in the area. But yeah, and it's a bonus to do that. But on the other hand, you know, Brussels is the headquarters of NATO. It's the headquarters of the European Union. It is just an incredibly target-rich environment if you like both mass casualties and highly symbolic targets. This is a great place to hit. Entirely possible that they picked American check-in desk as opposed to any other number of airlines. Sure, quite likely that they were trying to add that piece to the
puzzle. American Airlines, that's
sure.
their
well, yeah.
message.
There you go. There you go. Yeah.
So that's the bonus you're referring to is if Americans are involved, that they get extra points for that somehow.
Well, yeah. And, you know, and someone said, you know, for example, apparently one of the bombs was detonated in front of a Starbucks. You know, well, you know, they don't particularly hate Starbucks. But if you've been in an airport, especially if you're jet lagged, you know, you're going to go to the coffee shop as quickly as you can.
Yeah.
And there are going to be a lot of people there. You know, that's the thing is you can have a plan, but they have the ability to improvise. They get there. And, you know, they can choose to detonate, you know, wherever they see the congregation of people is. It happened in London. One of the bombers couldn't get down into the underground because the station was open for repair. It was closed for repairs. So what did he do? He gets on a bus, blows himself up there. That shows you how incredibly hard it is to try and counter these things.
Never ceases to amaze me. I know it's not as shocking as it once was, but it still is to me every single day.
And it should be. And if we ever get too used to it, that would be a cause for concern. But I want to leave you, if I could, with one thought, and that is for the average Americans, you know, don't become hostage to your fear. We're not Europe. There's so many more things going on here in terms of, you know, we don't have a ghettoized Muslim population. We have as much to fear from right-wing extremists. There's no evidence, you know, of this level of stuff. Yeah, there's a concern, but it's not an existential threat. And, I, you know, just go about your life. I can't stress that enough.
Thank you so much, Tom. Appreciate talking to you.
Have a nice day.
Thanks, Tom. You too. That's Tom Mikaitis, professor of history over at DePaul and terrorism analyst, getting his take in about what took place in Brussels earlier today.
And if anybody can make sense out of it, it really comforts me to talk to him to find out more information on this. And more facts are coming in as we speak. We'll keep you covered all day long here on WGN. And we're going to take a brief pause and then come back and talk to Steve Bertrand and find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill Left, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Thanks. Thank you, Kim. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Hi. How are you? Nice to see you. Please join in. 312-981-7200, please.
This is pleasant.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Kevin picked that out.
I picture Bill when I hear this song, and I don't know why.
Because he's a grandpa.
I was in one of the big bands back in the 1940s.
Just a jolly song. He's a jolly
Shaw.
Guy.
You like this?
I do like this. I like music.
You know who it is? It's Glenn Frey.
Is this Glenn Frey of the Eagles? Really?
The late great.
Maybe I'm wrong. Hang on. I got to double check that.
Here's an idea. Before you say something, don't follow my lead. Find out the facts first.
I may have misread. Hold on.
It's not Glenn Frey, is it? This doesn't sound at all like Glenn Frey. This makes me want to purchase a Zoot suit.
You would look good in a Zoot suit.
It's called Tuxedo Junction.
And it's by Glenn Frey?
Maybe not.
No, I don't think so.
Well, no, I can't
I don't think
continue
it is.
Until I know who it's by.
I would be shocked if this was Glenn Frey.
It was a misread. My producer told me the wrong information. It's Glenn Miller.
You don't have a producer.
It's Glenn Miller, not Glenn Frey.
Yeah, no, it's my producer.
You have an imaginary producer?
Jeffrey.
No, wait a minute.
You can't steal my imaginary friends. It
it's
doesn't
not
work
an
that
imaginary
way.
Friend. Bill had an imaginary assistant named Jeffrey, and I found some tragic news out yesterday, or 2 days ago.
You're close. Jeffrey was my imaginary friend who was my producer for a while. He got another job.
Assistant.
Yeah, and then I got Gerald, and Gerald passed away.
Oh. You guys are
long
weird.
Story. It's a long story.
Glenn Miller, of course. That's you think orchestra. That's the
yeah,
only
that
Glenn
sounded like
I could
Glenn
think
Miller.
Of. Why didn't I know that?
Here, can I share this with you? This is, you know, yesterday, I don't know if you're aware of this, was World Down Syndrome Day, and they put together a PSA, a public service announcement, to show online so people could, you know, have a better understanding of Down syndrome. It's sort of close to me. I have a cousin, a first cousin, Cheryl, who has Down syndrome, and I have friends who have a child with Down syndrome, and I know a little bit about it, and I know what it takes to raise a child who has Down syndrome.
It's and more of a challenge. It is.
Of course. So they put together this video, and I'll describe it to you a little bit. It's coming under fire. A lot of people are very upset with this PSA, this public service announcement, and it wasn't intended, I don't think, to cause any kind of a stir, but it has. Olivia Wilde is in it. You're aware of her work, right?
Yes. Now that I watch Vinyl, I have become a fan of hers.
She's a fine actress and a very beautiful woman. Would you agree?
In that order?
In any order. You pick the order.
You're cute when you're smitten in your Zoot suit.
She's really pretty. And a good actress, very good actress. She was on House for a while. She's been in a bunch of movies, a lot of TV shows. Vinyl is the most recent one. Anyway, in the video, and we will play the audio for you and explain to you why people are so upset. It starts out, it shows her in a bedroom. It shows Olivia Wilde. And then you hear a voiceover say, "This is how I see myself." And the voiceover is not Olivia Wilde's. It's another girl. It's an actress who I think is 19 years old and who has Down syndrome. So she starts out by saying, "This is how I see myself." And then for the next minute or minute and 15 seconds, she's doing things. She's doing kind of everyday things that you would expect anyone to do. And then at the end, it comes full circle. And she explains, you know, there's good moments and there's bad moments. And they show her laughing and crying and being with her family. And I think she's kickboxing in one point. She's doing all kinds of different things. And then at the end, again, it says, it goes back to the bedroom scene, and it's Olivia Wilde, and she says, "This is how I see myself." And then you hear the words, "How do you see me?" And the camera pans over, and you see the other girl, the girl who has Down syndrome. Again, with those words, "How do you see me?" So people are upset because they're saying, why should a person with Down syndrome not see themselves? You can do all of those things. With Down syndrome, it's a disservice to anybody who has Down syndrome to want to envision themselves unrealistically as not having it. You know what I mean?
Right, but the point she's trying to make is, like, how do you see this person? Like, we're the same.
That's what
look at us the same.
They
even look alike.
That's the intention.
She didn't wear any makeup or anything. She looks very similar to this girl who is 19-year-old Anna Rose Rubright.
Right. Right.
She's not making fun or anything.
No, they're not saying making fun. They're just saying that why paint somebody with Down syndrome as being disadvantaged and not quote unquote normal? Why couldn't that girl have just been for the minute and a half? Why couldn't she be doing all the things that Olivia Wilde is doing.
Because she's saying that a person without Down syndrome and a person with Down syndrome are the same thing.
Right. Oh, I know that. I get that. But so many people are upset saying you've done a disservice to the community of anyone who has Down syndrome. And I don't see it that way. Can I play the audio for you?
Yeah.
Let's play I don't know if we'll get through the whole thing. It's like a minute and 20 seconds or something. But here's the public service announcement we're talking about with Olivia Wilde. Listen.
This is how I see myself. I see myself as a daughter, a sister, and a best friend. As a person you can rely on. I see myself meeting someone that I can share my life with. I see myself singing, dancing, and laughing until I cannot breathe. And also crying sometimes. I see myself following my dreams, even if they are impossible. Especially because they're impossible. I see myself as an ordinary person with an important, meaningful, beautiful life. This is how I see myself. How do you see me?
All right, it's written beautifully. It's
touching,
photographed,
it's beautiful,
gorgeously.
There's nothing wrong with it.
I don't think so either. It's not, if for those of you who haven't seen it, and just hearing it doesn't really do it justice. You almost need to see it to
on
get
our
the
live
full
blog.
Scope. It's on our live blog, certainly. How do you get to the live blog?
WGNRadio.com/BillandWendy.
All right, so it's on there, and then I'm hoping it'll also be on our Facebook page soon. Kevin will put it on there, so watch it and decide for yourself. But I understand the intended message, and I fit the camp of people, and it's. I'll read you when we come back. I'll read you an article from there's a website called The Establishment that talks about how wrong this public service announcement is. But I don't see it as being wrong. I know exactly what they're going for. They're saying somebody with Down syndrome doesn't necessarily need to see themselves as disadvantaged. They want to see themselves as just like you and me. So that's what they're saying.
The only problem is, you know, they get a very beautiful girl to do it. They should have just gotten just me.
But
just
I guess
an average
they could have
person.
Done that.
But that might be what the hang-up is. But there is nothing disrespectful. It's a beautiful message.
Oh, it is. I think it is. It really is. All right. We'll discuss this further. And if you haven't seen it, like I said, I urge you to see it. A couple ways to do it, our Facebook page. And the other way is, again, Wendy, how do they get to the...
Just WGNRadio.com/BillandWendy.
Yeah.
It's our live blog that goes on what
show.
We talk about throughout the day. And if we talk about something, there's videos, there's pictures. There's you in a zoot suit maybe someday.
Yeah, I'm wearing a zoot suit on there, so you can see that. All right, so more discussion next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We have a breaking news right now. Steve Bertrand has
it. Just before you go, I wanted to make you aware of something because it's getting a lot of play on Twitter and being seen. But there's apparently a fire, a substantial fire at Grand Central Terminal in New York City. And it's being evacuated now. And remember, I talked earlier about the fact now that we're seeing everything through sort of a different lens today. This is almost certainly just a fire at Grand Central Terminal. One Twitter user who's there says it's in Junior's restaurant. So they've seen the fire, but they just ordered an evacuation of the terminal. So I just want to let you know in case people are also hearing about that. That apparently is what's going on there.
Thank you. And, you know, better to be safe than sorry.
Sure. Absolutely. All right. More discussion next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right. Yesterday was World Down Syndrome Day, and a public service announcement was made with extremely good intentions. It stars Olivia Wilde, the actress who's currently on Vinyl, but she's got a pretty impressive resume behind her. It's beautifully shot. It's well written. It's narrated by another actress, a girl who is 19 years old. at the beginning of the video, and at the end of the video, she says, "This is how I see myself." And then for about a minute and 20 seconds or a minute and 30 seconds, she does pretty much an array of normal things that we all do. But then at the end comes the line, "How do you see me?" And the camera pans over, and it's not being voiced by Olivia Wilde, but by the girl with Down syndrome. A lot of critics are saying it's unfair that somebody with Down syndrome should not try to see themselves as quote-unquote normal, but realize they can achieve all those things and still have Down syndrome.
Couple of texts on this, Bill, I would like to share. 630 says, "The thing is, why not have the same commercial but show Anna Rose the whole time instead of Olivia Wilde? It would be so much more powerful."
That's what a lot of the critics are saying.
But then 815 says, "What a crock. My sister had Down syndrome, and believe me, people see them differently. The commercial saying, please see me like that, too."
Exactly.
And you do see, they look physically different.
Yeah.
And what they're trying to say here is, don't see them that way. See them like you see everyone else.
There's a critic, a literary critic named Rick Godden, who has quite a lot to say about it, but most notably this quote: "This video reinforces the idea that disabled people would rather imagine themselves as being not disabled." I don't know that that's true. I can't say for sure that that's true. It says, "The video that was intended to promote," this is not Rick Godden, this is the writer, David Perry, who writes for The Establishment. "The video is intended to promote World Down Syndrome Day, which is held every year on March the 21st. Their goal is to make you, the viewer, reflect on this question. How do you see me? When you look at a person with Down syndrome, do you see a person with the potential to live a full and complex life, or do you see only a disability?" So that is obviously their goal, is to say, don't see the disability, see the person, and that person is just like you. So I understand where people would say, hey, let the actress with Down syndrome play the whole role.
That's not the message they're trying to get a point across.
Right.
I told you this, when I was pregnant with Michael, I was going to be over 35 when I delivered.
Yeah.
So we had to do, we did this x-ray that was a precursor to 3D ultrasound.
Mm-hmm.
So they would measure certain characteristics to see if perhaps the baby had Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was genetic counseling. And they only do this if you're over 35. So they did the markers, and everything appeared to be okay.
Yeah.
And then they sat us down. I'll never forget this. Jim and I are sitting with this woman, and she brings out her clipboard, and she goes, "Okay, we just wanted to discuss a few things. The markers we looked at all seem to be okay, but you never know. And with your age, you just never know.
Right.
And we want to make sure that you are prepared if you know, maybe your baby would be born with Down syndrome." And we're like, "Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
we take whatever we have."
Right.
And she goes, "Well, that's good to know, because kids today with Down syndrome fare very well at like supermarkets." And Jim and I are like kicking each other
that's
under
strange.
The table. Like, are you kidding me? This is the genetic counseling. What, they could be a bagger at a.
That's strange.
I couldn't
that
believe
been
it.
Brought up.
They go on to lead very normal lives, and we're like, yeah, we know this. Thank you, though. But we will never forget that.
That's
Isn't
a strange
that terrible?
Yeah, it is. It is strange.
I will never ever forget that.
All right. Well, again, if you've not seen the video and you would like to get more information on it, there's a couple ways that are available. WJNRadio.com, our live stream has it, and then also at our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, it can be found there. I found it to be very touching
and
very beautiful, and I understand the intended message. I could see where people might have a little bit of a qualm or two with the presentation. I get that, but if you really look at it for what they were intending, which is just the simple message of different, yes, but certainly able to do everything and feel all the same emotions that everybody else can, I think it succeeds that way.
815 says, "I have a disability. Do I imagine myself without one?" Heck yes.
Don't all of us at some point imagine ourselves or want to imagine ourselves a more flawless version of ourselves? Isn't that part of what imagination is to say, I wish I was a little taller. I wish I could lose some weight. I wish I was this. I wish I was this. I think that's just part of the genetic makeup of us, I think, right?
I'd agree.
So why not?
We all want better, and we all want what, you know, your friends have.
Yeah, yeah.
Including Kevin's gummy bears.
Yeah, he's not giving them. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We have a lot more show for you next. It's Bill Left and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
We hiked along without care. Then we ran into a bear. He was a hairy bear. He was a scary bear. We beat a hasty retreat from his lair.
That's the sound effect, by the way, when you run into a bear. You'll hear a giant cymbal effect. I don't know why, though.
Well, thank God we have naturalist Dave Smith on the line with us right now. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Wendy. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. You have to thank some listener, because last week we were talking about survival tips. What was it, Bill? Survival things you need to know?
Yeah, just basic things that will help you survive in the wilderness. And I said at the time, Dave, there should be some sort of a chart that we could have that would tell us, you know, when we run into various kind of bears, if we want to scare them or pretend we're dead or what we need to do, you know?
And we were talking about it, and a listener texted in, you got to get the book Don't Get Eaten. So...
Well, yeah, sometimes I feel like you need a degree in bear behavior to figure it all out.
Sure.
Well, now, there are bears here in Illinois. Mm-hmm. I think we have black bears here.
Mm-hmm.
And there are different things you do for different types of bears, correct, Dave?
That's right. And I grew up in Wisconsin, which, of course, has lots of black bears. And black bears, the way you're going to get in trouble is if there's a serious incident, it's likely to be a predatory black bear.
Explain, because I don't get that. I'm not a naturalist.
That means it wants you for lunch.
Oh, all right, that would be bad.
That's bad. And the behavior isn't threatening or anything. Obviously, it's almost hunting you like it would another creature. So it's not going to growl and raise its hackles and make a big commotion. It's just coming to get you. And the only thing you can do is fight back by any means necessary.
Bite, kick, scream, punch, everything, right?
Exactly.
No rules.
And they're very, very determined.
Yeah, I bet.
It's either going to be you or the bear. But there have been cases. There was one case in Canada where a 12-year-old girl at a fairly remote cabin ended up throwing a pot of boiling water at the bear and then escaping. So you can get creative when you're under stress.
So always carry a pot of boiling water, right?
No, nothing's off limits is what that says. But now, what are the odds you're going to survive a black bear attack, like a full-grown, hungry bear, black bear?
Boy, I don't know what it would be because the attacks are uncommon, but... There was an incident in Canada at Liard Hot Springs where one bear went on a rampage and killed like two people and injured a couple other big burly logger types. So it's very, very difficult.
Is it, Dave, with bears, is it one of those, because we hear this about a lot of animals, that their primary thing is protecting their young, and if they feel that you're a threat to their children... That's when they'll attack.
They don't have children. They have babies.
They have baby bears. Or sometimes they'll travel with children also.
So, in their stomachs.
Yeah, sometimes.
In their lunch bucket.
Right, for later. A snack for later.
No, that's a very good point. With black bears, they're way less inclined to charge than, say, a grizzly bear mother with cubs.
Oh, yeah?
The black bears typically flee. But... If you're in a situation, you just don't want to get too close. And often that's a result of people crowding a bear for a picture, say.
Oh, no. People do that?
Oh, yeah.
Who doesn't want a bear selfie?
I know. When I lived in Yellowstone, I always used to say, when you're swimming in the ocean and you yell shark, everybody gets out of the water. But when you're in a park and you say bear, everyone grabs their cameras and runs toward it.
What's with that? We need to fix that. That's not safe.
All right. So if you're camping in Wisconsin or in the Midwest or anywhere that there's a black bear and a bear wanders into your camp, do you just like kind of shake a pan at it and bang on things to get them to go away, or do you fight?
use the pan and things. And it's a situation where the more people, the merrier. And you can be aggressive. If it was, you know, Bill and Wendy at a campsite, well, start banging pots and pans, yell, clap your hands, lunge a step toward the bear. And the more commotion you make, the more likely you are to be able to drive it away. They just want to get at food they may have had previous experience at that very campsite.
They're big fans of baked beans.
They love baked beans.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
So how can we identify a black bear? Obviously, there are no grizzlies here in Illinois that I imagine. I could be wrong.
Oh, it's one of those things that's instinctual. If you ever see one in the woods, the moment you see it, you'll recognize it as a bear. I guarantee that.
I run if I see a squirrel coming at me, Dave. I don't want to have a bear at me. A squirrel is enough for me.
Yeah, there's not much to it. There's nothing else that looks like them or has that kind of size.
But Dave, there's no time to identify. Like, as a bear's coming at you, you don't want to pull out a book about identifying bears and go, wait a minute, okay, so he's got the dark. Okay, so that part, there's no time for that. You got to just get out of the way, right?
Yeah, and in a place like Yellowstone or other places in the West where you have both black bears and grizzlies, your initial response in a close range encounter is always just to stand your ground, which is the hardest thing to do because your body and brain are saying, run,
right,
let me out of here.
Right.
But if you just stand your ground, in terms of bear behavior and body language, what that's telling the bear is, I'm willing to stay here and fight. If you touch me, I'll defend myself. It's going to cost you. So that's the best thing to do initially. Then, if you can keep your wits about you, you look and you say, well, the bear's not interested, or it's a sow with cubs, and she's not moving toward me now.
Yeah.
Then you just gradually step back, increase the distance, because that's what makes you nervous, and that's what makes the bear nervous, too.
Dave, I'll say what I said last week, and Wendy got very mad at me, so you can explain why she got mad at me, but I said, you never have to run faster than a bear. You have to run faster than your friend, right?
Yeah, but running is the wrong thing to do.
Is it?
Black bears or grizzly bears.
They'll outrun you.
They're, you know, half again as fast as an Olympic sprinter.
Wow.
So running, you know, flight will trigger pursuit, and the bear will win the race every time.
Yeah.
All right, now I'm confused, Dave. Dave Smith is a naturalist. He's worked in Yellowstone, Glacier, Denali, Glacier Bay National Parks. You were a winter keeper in the snowbound heart of Yellowstone. But now we have been told in the past, and correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, that depending on the bear depends on your reaction. But you're saying even a grizzly bear, you just, if they're angry, do you stand up to them, or do you not make eye contact? We heard a bunch of different things for different types of bears.
Like the one they were stressing was you want to make yourself appear bigger, raise your arms up over your head to make yourself look even larger. Is that a good tactic or not?
I can just see the bears going, what is that person doing?
Right.
Got to get to the bottom of this.
But maybe if you make the bear laugh, it'll buy you a few minutes, Dave, don't you think?
It'll buy you a drink.
Yeah, maybe.
It really works out to, you're trying to determine, is the bear reacting defensively? That would be a situation where you surprised a sow with cubs, whether it was a black bear or grizzly bear. In that case, if you don't have a firearm or the bear spray to protect yourself, you wait till the bear almost makes contact. If it charges, then you flop down and play dead. But if the bear is being predatory, that's your other category, whether it's a black bear or grizzly, fight back by any means possible.
A texter has texted in and said, instead of outrunning your friend, you should just tell your friend to run.
Right.
Right.
And then point at your
that.
Friend while he's running away and go,
hey,
how about that
here.
Guy? That guy's nuts.
That would work. And, you know, in the Don't Get Eaten book, I was talking about predatory bears will sometimes, it's everybody's nightmare. You're in your tent and all of it, you're sound asleep. There's a rip and a bear grabs you.
Yeah.
So what I advise people is, say, like if it was Wendy, I say, Wendy, if you're out there with your husband and you're camping in a tent, First, you put the gear on the edge of the tent. Then you put your husband there, and you get in the center where it's safe.
Sure. That's
I'll
how you do it.
Remember that. That's why I stay in hotels, just so you know.
Dave, do people do the – remember, I don't know if they still do this. I've seen this in movies where if they're camping, they'll put their food way, way up high on a pole so that the bear, I guess, can't smell it or something. Is that why?
Or can't reach it.
Can't reach it?
Can't reach it. And that's common in national parks. They'll actually provide food poles and things in the backcountry sites, so it's easy for you to get up there where it's safe, out of reach for the bear. And then that way it doesn't develop an association where, hey, if I go to campsite number G7, there's food there every time I go. That's what you don't want to happen, and that's why people use those.
Dave, when I was a kid, my mom used to do that with me with Milk Duds. Put them up high on a pole so I couldn't reach them. That's crazy, right? I don't know why she'd do that.
Dave, have you yourself ever been attacked by any kind of bear?
I hate to admit it, but I have been charged.
What? What happened? Charged is bad. What happened?
They should use cash.
I simply, it was all my fault. I was with a friend. We were trying to photograph bears. We were keeping concealed. The wind was in our favor. The bear had no way of knowing we were there till it was too late.
Oh, no.
And then it charged. So,
but you just made fun of people who took pictures of bears, but you yourself did it, and it almost cost you.
That's when I was a young man.
All right.
Eons ago, and I learned from that experience.
Yeah, I bet.
See, that's where we're all here to learn from our mistakes.
Sure, absolutely.
And if you're Dave Smith, you're here to teach us so we don't get killed by a bear. Don't Get Eaten is the name of one of your books, and Backcountry Bears Basics. Where can we find your books, Dave?
They're available at Amazon and all the large retailers or directly from the Mountaineers Books.
Outstanding.
It was a pleasure to meet you, and if we have any more bear questions, we would really like it very much if you would be our bear expert.
You're a guy.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on again.
Dave, thanks so much. That's
absolutely.
Dave Smith, the author of Don't Get Eaten. A guide to help you, obviously, not get eaten by bears.
I thought that book was about something else.
Maybe it is.
Mountaineersbooks.org. He's very pleasant.
Yes, he is. He's a nice man. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I feel stupid.
I do, too, and I don't know how we missed this, but a texter was very helpful in making both you and I feel stupid.
Yeah, it's like, why ask this guy about if he saw the movie Revenant, The Revenant.
There is, I believe, the greatest bear attack scene in the history of cinema in The Revenant. One of those, first of all, a great movie start to finish, but in that particular scene, and I hope I'm not ruining it for anybody
because
it's been talked about a lot, but it's a rough several minutes to endure watching this attack scene. And the whole time you're saying to yourself, I'd be dead by now. I can't. I don't know how you're surviving this.
I'm blaming you then because you saw the movie. I haven't seen it yet.
For now, I should have asked. I don't know why I didn't ask a question about The Revenant. And then also there's that video that was out years ago with that guy who was out in the wild and got attacked by bears.
Is it Timothy Treadwell?
Yeah, Timothy Treadwell. That's the guy.
He didn't tread well if he got attacked by bears. No. Was he killed?
I don't want to say for people who have not seen the video yet.
Well, that's not a...
I'm not going to say. I will not say.
I got to see. He was an American bear enthusiast. I think was is the operative word there.
I'm not saying. Also a year ago, and I don't remember what website I saw this on, but there were a bunch of people, as Dave Smith pointed out, the author of Don't Get Eaten. The worst thing you do when you see a bear coming at you is go for your camera because, you know, they're not buying into that at all. So I saw this video of these people near a bridge. There's a whole bunch of people, and then there's a bunch of bears coming up, and all the people are like, oh, bears, this will be great. And they all go for the cameras, and the bears, they just attack. They don't attack to the point where they get them and maul them, but they start running after the people with the cameras.
I know it's really weird to see animals in the wild because, you know, we see bunnies every day.
Yeah.
Bears are not like bunnies.
Bears are not... Hold on a second, because I want to write that down, because I always wonder if they're like bunnies. Bears are not like bunnies, you're saying.
My mom and my sister went on a bunch of African safaris, and it's like they see an elephant or a zebra walking around like we see a squirrel in the backyard. I just can't fathom that really happens. I know it does, but I've never witnessed it. So to see a bear, I would be pretty excited about it.
I still get weirded out if I'm near a deer. Like any animal that's as big or bigger than me, that's like my threshold. It's like, oh, that thing. And I know a deer's not going to probably not attack
me. Yeah, you never know.
Every once in a while, you get a rogue deer that just goes, I've had enough of this.
You people have been shooting at me for years. I'm going to buck you.
There's a bicycle path near me, and not last summer, but the summer before, as we were riding down the bicycle path, we take a turn, and there's three really good-sized deer right there by the path, and it throws you that, wow, something that big is just walking around out in the wild like that.
But isn't it bizarre that you have the same reaction as if you have a mouse in your house or something? It's like you do kind of say eat because it's just all of a sudden there it is.
Right.
Over a deer?
Well, it's kind of the same thing because it's like you're riding your bike and all of a sudden it's like,
it.
Oh!
Yeah.
Maybe it's not as eek, but it's, oh.
Right. Well put.
Thank you very much. Put that on a bumper sticker,
I'm going to put that on there.
Nancy, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine.
You have a tale of woe involving a bear. This is a crazy story, huh?
Yeah, a friend of mine her brother had a bear that he got when he was a cub, and he got a permit from the DNR to keep the bear, and he had him in a big cage in his backyard, and he went on vacation, and he asked my friend's husband to come over and feed the bear while he was on vacation.
Who's going to say yes to that, by the way? Who's going to say yes? Who's going to say yes? Hey, could you go feed my bear in the cage?
Yeah.
Well, he was his brother-in-law, and he had known the bear since he was, the bear knew him, and he had taken care of him before. And so he went over there one day to feed the bear and give him water and whatnot, and for some unknown reason, the bear attacked him and killed him.
Oh my God.
That's terrible. That's awful.
Yeah.
Well, we grew up watching Gentle Ben with the great...
Clint Howard was in Gentle Ben and Dennis Weaver.
Gentle Ben.
Yeah.
And it looked like you could be friends with a bear after seeing that.
I wouldn't trust a bear to be my friend. I would not.
Well, they say that wild animals are, they're unpredictable.
Right.
They're wild.
They can go back to being wild whenever.
Even people with, you hear the stories about people with monkeys where after a while a monkey just goes, enough of this, and just goes for the face.
Yeah, a woman who tore the
ape.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Goes ape.
Yep.
Yes.
That's such an awful story, Nancy. Seriously, that's terrible. I'm never going to watch a friend's bear ever under any circumstances. Ever.
It was pretty horrible at the time.
I guess. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you for sharing that, Nancy.
Not just at the time. It's still
it's horrible.
1,000 years from now, if somebody brought that story up, I'd still qualify it as being terrible. You're trying to help somebody. No good deed goes unpunished, Wendy. I've told you this before.
I'm starting
to
believe
this is a guy
it.
Who just wanted to help his friend out. Could you just keep a bear in your backyard in a cage? Is that even a thing?
I think in Wisconsin you can.
Is that where they allow that?
I don't know.
Like here in town, if one of your neighbors had a bear in their backyard in a cage, absolutely.
I call the police on people who have chickens in their backyard when they're not supposed to.
I can't imagine. Like,
I don't.
You have to apply. I mean, you'd need a permit or something. Wouldn't you have to have a bear in your backyard?
Yes.
I'm not paying for a bear permit.
People
Forget
don't
it.
Even get the permits for, are you supposed to have a permit for your rabbit?
I don't think so.
Because you have to register like cats and dogs. You have to get licenses.
Isn't there a bracket called an exotic animal permit? Because a rabbit wouldn't qualify as an exotic animal, but a bear would if you had a bear in your yard.
What does a rabbit qualify as? How come I have to get a permit and you don't?
Because, you don't for your...
For a dog?
Well, no.
You have to get a dog license. You have to register it. He gets a little tag.
Oh, does he? But not a permit, a license,
Not even a license. You just register them so they know if it bites anyone that...
Whose dog it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the rabbit
has... You should register your rabbit.
I'll take them to City Hall, but I can't imagine them having... What would they do?
Well, you can lead a rabbit to City Hall.
Right. But you can't make them vote. All right, let's take a break. We have more show for you. Jim Peterick is going to join us after 2 o'clock, Wendy. That's exciting. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Won't you step inside my vehicle? And if you do, look who's in the back seat. It's Jim Peterick.
Hey, Jim. Hey. How are you?
Hi, Bill and Wendy. How are you guys?
Excellent.
Great.
I understood that you're going to be back at WTTW Studios because the fantastic show that you put together, Cornerstones of Rock, American Garage, you can get your DVDs by helping out WTTW as well. Is that tonight?
Yeah, Bill and Wendy, it's going to be so much fun. It's going to be me and Carl Giammarisi, the Buckinghams, and, of course, the inimitable Ron Onesti. And
Ron is everywhere.
He's inimitable.
I love him.
There must be three of them, I'm thinking.
Yep.
But he's got more energy than anybody I know. And he's really a great guy. So we'll be, you know, doing our dog and pony show, and such a good cause. I mean, Karen and I watch DTW all the time. She's addicted to Downton Abbey, and I don't see her anymore. But other than that, yeah, we're going to be re-showing the DVD, and you know, I'm going to bring my guitar, and you know, between you know, breaks, I'll be playing a little bit, and Carl will be playing a little bit. So we make it a lot of fun. And you know, just to reiterate the groups that you're going to be seeing tonight, it's like who's who of garage rock, and the groups that really made it out of the garage into the world stage, pardon the expression, Ides of March, Buckinghams featuring special guest Dennis Stefano, Crime Shames, New Colony Six, Shadows of Night featuring Jimmy Sons, the original Starling Punk, the McCoys, the Standells, Chase, Eliota Haynes and Jeremiah, and a special, unfortunately, the last performance of, man, I can barely get it out, Gary Loizzo of the American Breed.
I was just telling Bill about that off the air. I brought my son Michael to the Granger Studios when this was taped, and Gary Loizzo, the whole American Breed, it was such an honor and a privilege to talk to him, and my son Michael was just enamored with him. So this was very sad news in January when Gary passed away after battling pancreatic cancer. So get this DVD. I didn't even know he was sick. You couldn't tell, Jim.
He looked better than anybody on stage. You know, he's just, his spirit shone through, and he was extremely ill, and he almost didn't do the show. And I'm so glad he did. You know, we did a show at the Arcata on Saturday with most of the bands that I just mentioned. It was a sellout, and we did a special version of Bend Me, Shape Me, with his photograph on an easel, and it was very, very touching. So this is for Gary, and we're just having a blast, though.
And what are you working on now besides your Cornerstones of Rock?
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what. It's almost ready to come out. It's called The Songs by Jim Peterick. It's an unplugged album of 11 of my biggest hits, reinvented in Nashville with instruments like mandolin, fiddle, dobro, pedal steel, picture, if you will, almost bluegrass version of Eye of the Tiger.
Mm. That sounds great.
It's very interesting, and people are starting to love it that are hearing it. A bluesy Wurlitzer piano version of Vehicle with a special solo by Johnny A., the great guitarist, and a version of heavy metal with just me and Kelly Kagi and a blues harp. Pretty radical stuff for me. You know?
Jim, awesome. If you need somebody to play the mandolin for you, you have my number. You know that, right?
No, wait, I do have your number, but I didn't know you played mandolin.
I don't, but I would like to be part of it. I don't think I should be left out just because I don't play the mandolin. That's racist.
I almost fell for that, Bill.
All right. Well, consider it anyway for next time, please.
I will.
Jim, it's so funny because, Bill, you're hearing him go, 11 of my biggest hits.
Right.
I mean, 11 of his. How many hits do we have?
A total of zero right now.
Even your mandolin solo?
No, that doesn't count as a hit. That's not a hit at all. When you're at Channel 11, could you convince him to put the two Ronnies back on, please, Jim? Is there some way you could do that?
The two Ronnie, you mean Ronnie Rice and Ronnie Onesti?
Yeah, that's who I meant.
No, the two old dudes.
Ronnie
who were
Graham and Ronnie Corbett, I believe.
They were
names.
On when Monty Python was
yeah,
on.
Sunday
they were
nights,
so funny.
After Dave Allen at Large.
Oh, that was before my time.
Oh, right. I always forget. Wendy yeah. and I are a lot older than Jim. I always forget that.
Yeah, that's okay.
Well, I'm excited about the new record that's coming out, the songs, and keep us posted on that. But in the meantime, tune in to WTTW Channel 11 tonight. What time do you start? Because I'm telling you, it's pretty fun to watch Jim Peterik and Carl G. Morisi and Ron Onesti gets in there, too.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They perform and do crazy things.
Anything can happen, and usually does. We're going to hit at 8 o'clock. And keep rocking, you know. And hopefully, last time we raised 4 times the money that they expected, and everyone was blown away. So we want to keep that tradition going. It's for such a good cause.
Okay, and you can pick up a DVD as one of the premiums tonight, Cornerstones of Rock, American Garage. You will love it. It turned out absolutely wonderful. I was really happy to be a part of it.
It did. And Wendy, you did a great job, and I'm getting you your DVD today. So hold on loosely.
And make Ron Onesti pay for the DVD for me.
Yeah, make him pay.
You're darn right.
Absolutely. Jim, thank you so much. Have a good time.
Thanks for putting me on, guys.
Absolutely. Jim Peterik, the great Jim Peterik.
Hold on loosely, Bill.
He slipped that in, didn't
he? I know,
I
love it.
He has a way of doing that. I don't know how he does it. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back. We've got more show next, Bill and Wendy WGN. The pizza drops at 7 p.m., Wendy. That's what I'm saying.
Don't drop the pizza.
Don't drop the pizza, kids. Be careful.
Our Hawks have to win tonight.
This would be a good time, really, to get on a roll. It really would be. I don't know what's happened the last week or two. It's very uncharacteristic, and it seems like once they got all their best guys back and they made their trades, that's when things got a little rougher. And I've heard several people say maybe it's just a matter of everybody getting used to everybody. That could be it.
No, they've already been used to people. Why all of a sudden now?
Well, they
and the lines are being switched like crazy. This is usually the dry spell for the Chicago Blackhawks.
Right about now?
If I remember last year. And then April, they're back strong.
That would be fine.
How many season games are left? There's only
eight or nine. Yeah, not that many. The Bulls somehow have done well of late. They've won 3 in a row, so that's good news. They're in the 8th spot for the playoffs. That's all right.
I think next season I'm going to start giving some love to the Chicago Bulls. Because I never do.
It makes for some exciting basketball. They've had a rough season. They've had all kinds of injuries all season long to their best players. Joakim Noah is still out. They don't think he'll ever play another game for the Bulls. He'll be with another team next year, probably. But losing Jimmy Butler for lengths of time, Derrick Rose for lengths of time, it's not been an easy season. Pau Gasol. Pau.
What?
Pau Gasol.
Of the Batman.
His parents were huge comic book fans, and they named him Pau.
P-A-O?
Yeah. Exclamation point. He's the only NBA player with an exclamation point in his name.
You're jealous.
Pow!
In his first name.
In his first name, right. A lot of them had it in the last names.
Hey, Steve, I know we're going to get to your news shortly, but I'm curious, getting some rumblings of another item that was found in Brussels.
They're doing some searches, and in a home they found an explosive device, I think, with some chemicals and an ISIS flag. That what you mean?
Yeah.
Right.
I'm just intrigued. Earlier in the day, what was his exact quote to me? I have to...
Man up?
No.
Pull yourself together?
Pull yourself together.
Pull myself together.
Yeah, I didn't
solid
mean it
advice.
The way it
no, I know, that was but, solid advice.
Bill, you've known me a long time, and even with my son in Ireland for the next couple of days,
yeah.
I'm really not...
Relatively calm today.
I just, you know...
All things considered.
I hate hearing about this, and I'm as upset as I am any other time I hear about this.
Right. Right.
So I just want to know all the deets. I get very into the news. I become a news junkie when important things in life happen.
Sure, and of course.
So I have pulled myself together, and I know you have news coming up, but I had seen some reports about the ISIS flag and some nails. And
yeah. Steve, I wanted to ask you, during the news it was reported, I guess Ted Cruz is criticizing Barack Obama, saying...
Yeah.
He should not be in Cuba watching baseball games.
With the Castro brothers.
Right, with the Castro brothers. He should either be home in the United States or his other option was to fly out to Brussels. That wouldn't happen.
That is stupid advice.
I don't think that would happen, would
did
it?
Did the story say that, to fly to Brussels? I don't remember.
Yeah,
that
he really said that?
He
said, yeah, in the sound actuality we played of him. He said that he should either be home or head out to Brussels. That's not a good idea.
Because they
right
don't
now.
Even no. want people to, you know, keep the traveling to Brussels down to a minimum at this point.
Right.
Although you tend to think
well,
what's
you know
happened
what?
Has happened.
There used to at least be a moment or two when we were a country first.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and this wasn't an attack on the United States, but clearly it was an attack on an ally. And, you know, right away, it's political fodder.
Right.
Which is...
Okay,
you know,
but...
And I'm sure it would happen on the other side, too, I would imagine. But, you know, it's just, hey, come on, let's rally around a little bit here.
Why doesn't Ted Cruz go over there?
Well, realistically, let's say... President Obama was in the United States, it wouldn't be protocol for him to fly out there right now. So,
no. God, well, no, let's put your president into a dangerous situation. That's smart, Mr. Cruz.
The airport's closed.
The airport is closed.
Well, he'd drive.
It'd be bad just for the, not even that it's dangerous there, but just for the investigation. They don't need to worry about that. And what there'd be no reason for that to happen.
So what is Ted Cruz? I know he's trying to stir up some emotion. I get that. But if you're realistic about the whole situation, you know, this morning he had been quickly briefed on what went on while he was in Cuba. There was little to nothing he could do.
He made a statement. And then went on business as usual. He's in Cuba for a reason.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, you have to put on your big boy pants when you're president.
Yeah.
You've got to do more than one thing at a time. And I'm sure that they, you know, they understand that there's a little, the optics aren't great here, where he's at a baseball game in Cuba. While on TV, most of the news is about this tragedy in Brussels.
Sure.
But you got to do a big job. And part of that, look what's happening in Cuba. I mean, we're really not giving that its due, I don't think. You know,
it's a major development.
It's a huge development. I mean, this has been consuming for so many of us for so long.
Right.
And here you have a president there. So that's a big deal, too. You know, probably bigger to the United States than this one attack in Brussels. So... Yeah, but, you know, Ted Cruz doesn't like the fact that the president is opening up Cuba, and so he's just using this for political gain.
Yeah.
You know, they're voting today. They're voting in Utah in caucuses and in an Arizona primary, too.
Do you imagine, I already know the answer to this, but I'll ask you anyway, do you imagine that in any upcoming debates over the next several weeks that what happened today in Brussels becomes a paramount issue? That's going to be the top topic for a while, isn't it?
Well, we'll see, because it, you know, that we do get to a point where, not that it becomes routine, but it's not as dramatic, I don't think, as Paris was. Paris was huge, mm-hmm. and it was huge in the trajectory of Donald Trump. I mean, I think that had a big impact.
The timing of it all?
Yeah, on him getting a second or third look and building up quite a lot of support.
You know, and it's not in America.
No, but this one follows by, 3 months? Almost 3 months to the day?
Yeah.
4 months. And, you know, I don't think it will have as big of an impact on the American psyche as the Paris one did.
But when Donald Trump uses, and he's used this defense before, this kind of thing won't happen when I'm president.
Oh, my God, it's going to happen more.
But there's no explanation of how that's not going to happen. It's just the broad statement.
You're on a need-to-know basis. He doesn't have to tell you.
No, I guess. All right.
Well, he's going to bomb the hell out of ISIS, Bill.
And get their families. We know that. He's going to go after their families.
He retracted his comments
on that.
Well,
he said that go after their families doesn't necessarily mean kill their families. It just means go after their families.
Waterboard them.
He wasn't specific, but they're going to go after them.
He said to waterboard this Paris mastermind, too.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know that he's a mastermind. I mean, we know that he didn't go through with the bombing,
right,
and he escaped.
Yeah.
But I'm hearing other reporting that he was just one of them. You know, that he wasn't the one of them.
And I doubt that he was one of the head dude, because why would he put the car in his name?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
It's like when Bill and I go out with you, we always put the car in your name.
Always.
I know. Right. I've got those bills that I'm still paying for.
Standard. Right. All right. Let's do this. We'll take a break. Steve's got the news, and then we have more show for you. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy, and it's WGN. I don't know if you saw this, Wendy. This is good news. I understand this. You are not a fan of the Chicago Cubs. I get that. You're a White Sox fan. But there's a story that I think will appeal to you. Do you know who Joe Maddon is?
Yes, he would be the guy in charge of the Cubs.
He's the manager of the Chicago Cubs. He has dictated that the Cubs now have a new dress code, and I think you're going to like
it. The Cubs fans? Cubs?
The Cubs themselves, not the fans.
They're
the fans can
the
dress whatever they want.
Blue?
No, well, no, that's their color. They can't.
If they didn't
have that, it would just be clear. You could see through their uniforms. That wouldn't be good.
Do you see where I'm going?
That's dirty. He says the Cubs have a new dress code. Now, not on the field. On the field, They will wear uniforms, as they have done many times in the past. But off the field, their new dress code, he says he wants them to look hot.
I am all about Joe Madden right now.
He really is a genius. Chicago Cubs manager Joe Madden, it says here, this is on MSN today, isn't only one of the best managers in the game. He was manager of the year last year. Do you know that? He has carved out a reputation for being one of baseball's most eccentric personalities. Madden, despite being old school in some respects, proved it once again by railing against the notion that ball players need to be dressed to the nines when traveling, instead opting for a philosophy that has players, here's the quote, exercise common sense when it comes to practical matters like dress codes. Now, this has been debated for years for various teams. They want their guys to look professional.
Like businessmen?
Well, some teams insist when they're not on the field that they wear jackets and ties.
That's probably too much, but I remember back in high school when all the football players and the wrestlers would dress up to go to their meets.
Yeah,
they'd
right.
be dressed in, you know, the shirts and ties. And
did they wear in
yeah,
in your
it.
High school, the That's, players?
That goes on at my kids' high school.
With Does some, it
with,
really?
With some teams, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm sure they don't do it anymore, but back and yeah, it looked good. It was like, you know, wow, look at those hot guys.
It's the saying, look good, feel good,
That's
play
it.
Well.
Is that what it is,
That
Kevin?
Is good.
Yeah.
Right. Well.
Correct.
Now, I was on the tennis team, what? And we just wore...
Skirts?
We did not wear skirts.
Skorts?
Yes, we wore skorts, not skirts, Wendy.
Oh, it's fun,
That's
Bertrand, when you and I are on the
That's
same
offensive.
Side. It's very rare.
That's offensive. We just wore like sweatpants and sweatshirts.
You did?
Yeah.
And Easy, then, George Costanza.
Well, it's fitting the event, you know? I mean, I think if our coach had said to us, hey, from now on, we're going to wear jackets and ties, we would have had a rebellion.
You'd have lost half the team?
Easily half the team, maybe more. And I was already on thin ice because I used to bring Adam LaRoche's young son with me to all of the games. Which is weird because he wasn't even born yet. I just, I don't know how I pulled that off.
It's easier to travel.
It's easier.
Madden, I think it's a great idea.
To dress nicely
yeah,
to and from.
Blackhawks dress up.
Well, I can see if you're a professional athlete, like the Blackhawks, like the Cubs, you wanna give off the vibe of, you know, we're a business. Right, but at the high school level, to wear jackets and ties seems...
And no jackets.
Just
It was
ties.
Just shirts and ties and
yeah.
dress pants. And it I just remember, you know, waiting for the bus to
yeah.
see the football players come back or whatever. They were all dressed up. Are you
ties.
Seeing
it? Well, how long did you wait, you little Randy student? Did you just stand there and wait for the bus to come
My
back?
My girlfriends were all cheerleaders.
Oh, they were?
I played basketball, and I don't think we... dressed up to go.
No.
We wore skirts and the Easy Spirit shoes, and then
oh,
we
did?
Played basketball in those shoes.
The same shoes.
Yeah.
It made traveling easier, right? Madden held a small meeting with who he refers to as his lead bulls on Sunday to go over the team rules, during which day-to-day policies were laid out so that everyone will be on the same page heading into the season. ESPN's Jesse Rogers says the biggest topic of discussion was shorts or not when on the road. Now, I could see where a major league team would say, hey, you can't just be wearing shorts. You got to look like a pro team, so you got to wear pants. But a jacket and a tie seems a little much to me, doesn't it, for an athlete?
No.
No, you're
all
right with
it? They're getting paid a lot of money. They all have nice suits when they go out.
Yeah.
Hi there. Who is this? Linda, how are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good. Your grandson dresses up?
My grandson is in eighth grade, and they have to wear a shirt and tie and dress pants when they
wow.
go to their OA games.
What team? What sort of team is he on?
Basketball.
He plays basketball, and
I
he dresses up.
I think that's awesome.
Wow.
And this is and they look so sharp. They really do.
I bet.
Yes.
It works. All right.
Yeah.
And he doesn't mind it? It's okay with him?
No. In fact, he wears a vest as well.
He does?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's fun to dress up. I'm sorry. My kid's in choir, and when they have concerts, it's like he comes home and he gets all dressed with a tie, and they look in the mirror and go, yeah, I'm looking good.
Yeah, they look sharp. They really do. And I live in Orland Park.
Oh.
So
the golf capital of the world.
The what?
The golf capital of the world.
That's right.
It is.
That's right. That's,
why?
No,
it should be the shopping capital of the world.
Wendy, it's not. It's the golf capital of the world. Take that, Augusta, Georgia. Yeah. Well, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Linda. We
That's
appreciate it.
That's so nice
it.
Of you. If I was on a professional sports team, Wendy, and I'm not, but if I were,
yes, you are. Well, your tennis association. You're a professional.
I don't know if I'm considered
semi-pro.
To be pro. Yeah, maybe. But I would wear, like, if I was on the Cubs, I would wear, like I did in Little League, I would wear my uniform to and from the game so that people could ask me how I did. Did you ever see that? Like a kid's riding his bike after the game.
It's pretty cute.
How'd you do? I would do that. I would ride around the streets of Chicago after the game, and I'd wear my uniform. I'd be proud to wear my Cubs uniform or my White Sox uniform.
I think kudos to Joe Maddon, and it's about time.
Yeah, but it's weird to say dress hot. Here, can I give you his exact
quote? That is
weird. Here's his quote. If you think you look hot, wear it, says Joe Maddon, the manager of the Cubs. I've always rallied against the fact that the previous generation really frowns upon non-collared shirts, which I've never understood. They've always been in favor of the collared shirt and that being more acceptable than the non-collared shirt. I would say in the history of sports, he has used the phrase collared shirt more often than any other manager.
He's used it so much, I'm confused. Does he mean like the George Harrison, Ravi Shankar era collarless shirt or just a T-shirt?
I think he means T-shirt, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Kevin?
I'm going to adopt the Joe Maddon philosophy for work.
Collared shirts only?
Looking hot.
Yeah?
Show up hot every day.
If you think, here's his quote. If you think you look hot, you wear it. I'm going to have that laminated and put on my closet door.
I don't mean to be mean.
But?
When have you ever felt hot?
I'm not here to feel hot, Wendy. That's not why I'm here.
And I've seen you look hot, Bill. But when have you when have you ever looked in the mirror and gone,
Bill, you're hot. You're a hot
little
guy,
little Billy,
Bill.
You are looking hot.
If I ever do look hot, it's purely by accident. I never intend to look hot. If it happens, it happens.
Let her bring you down, Bill.
No, I've seen him look hot. I've seen him in
Bill's
a suit.
The last
Bill's
time
a hottie.
When's the last time I looked hot?
When we were doing the live broadcast out in the Walk of Fame. You looked hot.
Well, thanks.
But that was a long time ago.
I wasn't trying to. I didn't want to upstage. It was Steve Bertrand's day. I wasn't trying to out-hot Steve. That's not how I work.
I could see Bertrand looking in the mirror going, oh, I am
That's
looking hot
look.
Today.
You think so.
Right? And you do the two, you do the finger point like Isaac the bartender would do in Love Boat.
Yes.
You would do that toward the mirror. Hot.
I got busted in the bathroom doing that in sixth grade. A guy walked in. I was doing the points, the double points in the mirror, and a guy walked in on me.
Oh, my God.
Real embarrassing.
You can never live that down. That's
forever. You can never forget it.
Well, nobody knew about it except that other guy until just now.
Oh.
That's what we like about you.
Oh.
Hot and honest.
Can we talk to, there's a coach. Matt has something to say about this. Matt, thank you for calling in. It's Bill and Wendy. What are your thoughts on this, sir?
Well, first off, thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
But whenever my high school cross-country boys go to a meet, we have them dress up real nice. And in my opinion, I think just the dressing up really nice, it intimidates the other team.
Does it? Yeah?
Yeah, because you got all these guys wearing the same thing. And
they look all pulled together, Matt. They look like a cohesive, pulled-together unit.
Yep.
Yes, definitely.
And the boys don't, there's no...
going, oh my gosh, look at these guys.
They look like they're pros. They don't resist. There's no, like, you've never heard from any of the boys, hey, we'd prefer it if we could just dress like kids. They're fine with it. They like this?
Oh, they love it, because then it brings them together as a team.
No, I guess so. Yeah, I guess so. Any of the boys wear bow ties or all regular ties?
Those are coming back.
I know.
Only regular ties.
Just regular ones? All right.
But bow ties are pretty damn cool.
They am all over the place. When you see it at Marshalls or TJ Maxx, you know it's in
for
style.
Keeps, I guess so.
Thank you, Matt.
All right.
I have to say, someone is you might be misconstruing what Joe Maddon is saying. 708 says Joe is saying they can basically wear whatever they want as long as they feel good in it.
Yeah,
so they don't have to wear suits.
Right. No, I get that. He's just saying, and again, here's the quote. If you think you look hot, then you wear it. So that's him saying it's up to your own discretion. But I got to think most of these guys are going to go, well, that's his polite way of saying, let's dress it up just a little bit.
Don't you think? Hot to me means spandex and a tank top.
Oh, that's probably what they'll wear then.
That's what I'm showing up in tomorrow.
Yep. Don't you wish it were tomorrow?
No, because Kevin has completely gone in a complete circle. Because he just said he's going to start wearing a suit every day and a tie.
No, I said I was going to start showing up hot, looking hot.
Everyone's interpretation is different. That's Kevin.
Double barrel it in the mirror right now, will you,
Kevin? I'm going to do it before I leave the house tomorrow.
All right, good.
Can't wait till tomorrow. Oh, a quick break. More show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Sure. Joe Madden knows what he's talking about. He's the manager of the year. Come on. Spent 1 year with the Cubs, brought them all the way into the playoffs, did a great job. He says to the players, hey, guys, fellas, listen up. If you think you look hot, you wear it. That's the new dress code for your Chicago Cubs. If you think you look hot, you wear it. That should be all of our dress codes.
Speedos.
Speedos for everyone. Why not?
Jan, what do you think about this dressing up thing? I think it's great.
Well, I'll tell you, I've seen several college football teams get off their buses. The ones that get off in shirts and ties or suits look so much nicer than the ones that come off with sweatpants, hoodies, the earphones, where they're listening to their tunes, they're kind of bopping coming off. They don't look as serious about the game. They look almost lazy or slovenly. The ones that are dressed properly, they just have an aura about them.
I have to admit, I'm coming over to this way of thinking. I really am. And these guys, especially your pro athletes, they can certainly afford it.
Absolutely.
You know, that's not an issue. You're winning me over, Jan.
If college kids can do it, the pros surely can afford it.
Yeah. High school kids are doing it. Yeah. You heard the coaches call in, and was it the word slovenly that kind of pushed you over to the other side?
Yes. As soon as I heard slovenly, I changed my mind.
That's what I thought. Jan, good work.
Okay.
So when you're driving to your tennis match later on today, are you going to wear a suit or just a shirt and tie?
No,
and shorts.
I honestly, I'm not on a pro team, obviously. It's just your basic USTA tennis. But when I drive out there, I do wear
what you're
going to
play.
What I'm going to wear on the court.
There aren't any dressing rooms or anything.
No, there is. But none of the guys. I can't remember. I don't think I've ever played against anybody or with anybody for the tennis matches that's dressed in a suit and a coat and a tie. That just doesn't happen.
Why don't you wear a tuxedo next time you play?
I'll do that. My opponent will go, oh, good, I'm playing James Bond. This will go well. What could go wrong here?
I think it's a great idea, and I do remember that in high school. Somebody else had said it still goes on in high schools right now. The kids have to, the boys athletes have to dress up. The cheerleaders wear their cheerleading outfits.
They do.
Because that's, you know.
That's expected. Is that what it is?
Because they feel hot in them.
I guess they do. Yeah, I guess they do. Now, somebody asked a good question about pro managers. Go ahead.
I could not find the answer to this, but thank you, 224, because I'll be wondering about this all day. Why do the coaches in baseball wear the uniform that the players wear?
Yeah.
But all other sports, the coaches wear suits.
Isn't that the strangest
thing?
Yes. In hockey and basketball, your coaches always dress up as nicely as they possibly can, usually a suit, always a jacket and a tie. In football, it varies.
A windbreaker.
Well, you had guys like Tom Landry, who was impeccably dressed every Sunday, but then a lot of your coaches will wear, a windbreaker or a sweatshirt, something with the team logo, but it's never the uniform. Like in baseball, every manager wears the uniform that the players
wear. I mean, honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, and who was in my thought bubble that you brought up?
Don Zimmer.
I can't get that out of my thought bubble anymore.
He didn't look great in a baseball uniform. Even during his playing days, it fit him poorly. But when he was an older gentleman and out of proportion, he didn't look great in a baseball uniform.
But it's just, you know, like you're hanging on to your little league days.
Right.
That's what it looks like.
Right.
I mean, even the socks and stuff.
Yeah, the high stirrup socks. Don Zimmer should have dressed like the guy in Monopoly. Wouldn't that have been better for him? He would have got more respect if he dressed like the guy in Monopoly.
He would have
really impressed a lot of other like opponents and things like that. I wonder if it's because in baseball, from time to time, you'd have a player manager. Could that be why? You don't think so? It doesn't happen often, but every once in a while, you get a guy who's both manager and player.
Well, why doesn't Joe Madden change that? Where he is now going to wear something that makes him look hot.
I wonder if one manager took a stand and said, look, I rarely, if ever, get into a game. I'm wearing a uniform. It's silly. I want to dress up. I want to wear a suit. I wonder if Major League Baseball would say no to that.
I would love to see that because you see Coach Q. He looks awesome.
Looks fantastic.
Basketball, you're right. They get up.
Yeah. Those guys always wear great
they
outfits.
Do look very nice.
They look nice.
I never thought about that till just now. Dave, what do you think?
Hey, you know, that whole baseball football thing is a bit off a George Carlin album called An Evening with Wally Londo.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about, like, it's okay for, like, a baseball manager to come out to wear a baseball uniform, but imagine if, like, Walter Alston, this is the guy who was a football player coach years ago, would walk out in a football uniform. Everybody would be like, what, are you out of your mind? Or,
right.
Or like a basketball coach walking out in a basketball uniform.
Yeah, with the shorts, that would be funny.
Oh, yeah, imagine, you know, Phil Jackson walking out, like, with the basketball uniform on as he's coaching. It would be hilarious, but... There's certain sports that, or Coach Q walking out in a Blackhawks uniform,
right, a hockey jersey
with his own goalie helmet. Yeah,
I'd look like an idiot, you know. But there's certain sports where it fits and certain where it doesn't.
Yeah,
well, thank you, Dave, for making sense of it.
Yeah, George Carlin, An Evening with Wally Londo. It's a great, great comedy album.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
I didn't know that. And Jackie, I think you have the final word on this.
Well, I hope so, but. The reason that the baseball managers and coaches wear uniforms is because they're allowed to go out on the field. No other sports do they go out on the field.
But
football, all right. Kind
in
of.
Football, you can a little bit to argue a call a little bit, right? But not
but
often.
They are not called. They don't go out on the field, whereas every time they change pitchers or they want to talk to a pitcher or they want to do something, they're allowed on the field, but most of your coaches are on the sidelines.
So if a baseball manager were to visit the mound to talk to the pitcher to see if he's going to keep him in or not, he could potentially get a little bit of dirt on his
suit.
Who cares?
They have dry cleaners.
Yeah, they do. Right. Right. All right, okay, but that does make sense. Thank you, yes. Jackie.
Thank you.
That's the reason.
Would it throw you if a manager walked out on the field and he was dressed nicely as opposed to the uniform? I would accept it.
Well,
all right.
Because somebody just said, because you'd look stupid if you're going out to talk to the baseball coaches would look kind of stupid walking out to the mound in a suit. No, they wouldn't. They'd look like a manager.
Right. Right. The coaches' boxes would be weird if a guy was wearing a Brooks Brothers suit and he was in the coaching box at first or third base. I guess that would be a little strange.
Just put a shirt on, though. Why do you have to have the pants?
You know, the whole.
I mean, really?
It's the whole uniform.
It's Halloween.
I know. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll talk to Ronan and find out what they have coming up next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.